Okay. We've got a slight numbers. Good morning to everybody. And I see a number of visitors from different entities who are here and also other people who are interested stakeholders. So welcome to all of you. We've got a slight amendment to our agenda for the morning. We've got a representative from the Auditor General's office. She will introduce herself just now. They've done an overview of the communications sector, all the entities that fall within this particular sector, and they want to do a presentation that will not be more than 15 or 20 minutes, just to give us a bird's-eye view or high-level view of the audit findings in respect of the department and all the entities in this particular sector. And I already had the request from them this morning, and I thought it was a useful idea to get them to present this to us. In the light of the fact that we're starting with our annual reports and we're calling in all the entities, so it's good to get this high-level view. So that will be the first item on the agenda. We're not going to take too much of time. I'm going to be very tight with the members. I'm not going to allow you too much of time for questions, etc. It's more just to sensitize us and to alert us, because we will be calling in all of the entities on those specific things. So we don't want to preempt any of those discussions. So with those few words, I'm going to hand over to the AG's office. They'll introduce, I don't know if there's a team here. You're alone. All right, you'll introduce yourself and then you'll take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. My name is Konijn Nijberg. I'm a business executive in the Office of the Auditor General's Office, and part of my responsibility is the portfolio for communication. Our reputation promise that we want to share information so that we can enhance oversight and, at the end of the day, accountability, and thereby building public confidence. And I hope that this presentation will also assist in achieving that. On the first slide, there is handouts. I think it's being handed out. It is a summary of the audit outcomes for 2009-10 for the communication sector. We've divided it into the departments and then the public entities. Included in the public entities is SABC, Centec, Post Office and Telkom, that we as the office don't necessarily audit at this stage. You will also see that there's the different audit opinions, disclaimer, adverse, which is really the worst audit opinions that can be issued. None of the entities or the department fall within that category. Then we have qualification, financially unqualified with other matters, findings on predetermined objectives and compliance, and then the grey block indicating financially unqualified with no findings on compliance or predetermined objectives. That grey block is really the ideal where we want to see everybody, where we say it's a clean audit opinion with clean administration, systems that is working throughout the year, controls that is working throughout the year. When we receive financial statements, 31st May, quality set of financial statements, and everything is working and the information that is being presented is reliable. When we look at the department, we see that for 2008-09, they were unqualified with other matters. There were some non-compliance last year and also predetermined objectives. For 9-10, there was a qualification, and it was in terms of the irregular expenditure where we couldn't determine the completeness of the amount that was disclosed. For the public entities, there is two entities that is currently in the grey block, the clean administration, and that is Telkom and Post Office. There are four entities with that's unqualified, but still have predetermined or compliance findings. And those four are NAMESA, USA, USF, and SABC. They moved from a qualification in 2008-09 to unqualified in 2009-10. And then two qualifications, and that was in terms of ICASA and CENTEC. There were also two qualifications in 2008-09. The following slide is just an analysis of improvement regressions in terms of audit outcomes. As I mentioned, the department, there was a regression, unqualified 8-9, and 9-10, it's now qualified. SADC did show an improvement in terms of the audit opinion, where they were qualified in 8-9, and in 9-10 being unqualified. CENTEC, a regression, they've been previously been unqualified. This year there was a qualification, and it, as I mentioned, it was in terms of the irregular expenditure, where completeness could not be confirmed. when we do this analysis, we focus on where does the department or the entities need to focus so that there can be improvements going to the 10-11 financial year. And what we indicate there is, first of all, we focus on leadership. And for leadership, we said that for 7 of the 9 entities that we included in this presentation, there needs to be enhanced and improved oversight responsibility. That is really in terms of the level of TG, CEO, board level, where there needs to be more involvement, review, monitoring, making sure that the systems in place, making sure that systems are being implemented and adhered to, that there's compliance. Down at the top, that is where, that's the attitude towards making sure that there is policies. I think in general in the communication portfolio, there's adequate policies, there is systems, there is a desire or there is an attitude to do the right thing and to comply. Action to mitigate the risk, there we've identified for communication, ICASA and SABC that needs to focus on having more focus on identifying risk and then to implement actions to mitigate those. We also focus on financial and performance management, and there we focus on daily, weekly, monthly activities. That's the reconciliations, the cash counts, the daily activities that is being performed in the CFO's office or in the finance department, and then also for performance information, the systems that are in place. Quality, reliable financial statements. Though there was 6 unqualified reports, there were still some material adjustments that had to be made to either prevent qualifications or to improve the outcome. So what we're saying is the systems that is in place needs to be enhanced and improved to make sure that when we get financial statements 31st May, that it's really quality financial statements that we can audit. We've identified this for the department, ICASA, USASA, USF, and then also for CENTEC. We said that there needs to be more focus on making sure that financial statements are quality financial statements. For proper record keeping, there we've identified NAMISA, SABC, and the department. For NAMISA and SABC, it specifically relates to performance information and being in a position to provide source documentation and supporting documentation for us to verify the information that's included in the annual report. And then adequate systems, that's your day-to-day systems, making sure that there is controls in place, making sure that irregular expenditure can be identified. If we go through later, although SABC had the unqualified, there is a significant amount of irregular expenditure that was disclosed at the end of the day. So there needs to be systems to allow the department and entity to identify irregular, to prevent weaknesses from happening, from making sure that reporting is accurate and reliable. And then the last focus area for improvement is in terms of governance. And there we focus on risk identification, fraud prevention, and internal audit. You can see the biggest focus was mainly on leadership and getting the oversight responsibility more focused to prevent the findings that we've identified this year. When we focus on the qualifications, this specifically focus on the department and then the 2 entities that received the qualification. So if we refer to 66%, it is 2 out of those 3 qualifications. So the green bars are for 2019, and the blue bars is then for 2008-09. We can see that for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there were 2 qualifications. It was for the department and for CENTEC, and it's because there wasn't proper processes in place to make sure that there's identification and then disclosure of what was identified as being irregular. The other 3 qualifications, accounts receivable, accrual, commitment, all 3 relate to ICASA. The accounts receivable, that qualification is primarily coming from the previous year, and it's the opening balance that we couldn't verify. There wasn't adequate supporting documentation for us to test the completeness and existence of the opening balance for receivables. For accruals, there was no system of control over the recording of outstanding invoices. So there was outstanding invoices that wasn't included and wasn't captured as an accrual. commitments there as well. They need to be focused to enhance the contract management process. Contracts were signed, but those contracts weren't necessarily included as part of the commitments. And as a result, we couldn't test the completeness, existence, and validity of the commitment that was disclosed. We focus on predetermined objectives, and that directly links to service delivery and the service objectives that have been approved in the strategic plans. We haven't expressed the public opinion as yet, but the findings that we've identified is as follows. There's two departments the department didn't have any findings on predetermined objectives. That means the system is working, the supporting documentation, the target is measurable, smart, time-bound, so we could verify the information that has been included in the annual report. We did identify two instances of non-compliance, and that was with SABC and Centec. Non-compliance is the basics. It's having a strategic plan, having a system in place to monitor and to make sure that we collect this information, that the information is available, and then that there's alignment between what has been approved and what is eventually reported in the annual report. So that was for Centec and SABC. There was non-compliance. Then four instances or four entities where reported information was not useful. Then we look at the SMART principles. The indicators that have been approved. So is it specific? Is it measurable? Is it time-bound? From the Auditor General side, we don't review or consider the relevance of targets. That's not our role. We only consider to say, is this information useful? Is it very specific? Do I know what to look for? Do I know how to measure? And will there be consistency if information is collected from different sources? Is there consistency or will there be different interpretations? Information not being useful, that was identified at ICASA, USA, USF, and also at the SABC, that the targets didn't meet that criteria. Reported information not reliable. In that instance, once we've now seen that the indicators is measurable, we need to go back and verify the information that has been included in the annual report. And for that, we need supporting documentation. So for NAMESA and SABC, we couldn't go back and verify it against supporting documentation. And therefore, information not being reliable, that really hampers oversight. If you don't know if you can rely on the information that is being presented, it makes it difficult to make decisions based on the information that has been included in the annual report. Findings with laws and regulations. There's not a lot of findings, non-compliance that has been identified in the sector in totality. There was three instances where we've identified to say that irregular expenditure haven't been reported immediately as required by the PFMA. There was two instances that was identified where there wasn't adequate systems to identify irregular expenditure, and then one where the accounting authority didn't pay suppliers within 30 days. When you look at the irregular expenditure, the first slide there is a comparison between 2019 and then 2008-09, with the green being the 2019 year. We can see that for both fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure, there was an increase in terms of what was disclosed and reported in the previous year. Sorry, I just want to go back to that one. I think the biggest one is for SABC. I did mention that they did receive an unqualified report. But if you look at what they've disclosed as irregular expenditure, it was 187 million rand that was disclosed as irregular during the year 2019. It is my understanding that there is an investigation surrounding the irregular expenditure. And then just the last slide.
Mr. Kulwani is asking, are you sure about this? I just heard him asking that.
I actually phoned after our meeting. I phoned to make sure it's actually correct, and I confirmed it is 187 million. The last slide is where we just make the split, and there we've excluded the Section 4.3. So SABC, Centec, Post Office, Telkom isn't included here. This is only the audits that we audit. The green bar is what we've identified during the audit, and the blue portion is what was actually disclosed in the financial statements that we've received. I think the bulk of it was in terms of the department, where there was initially 1 million disclosed. An additional 27 million was identified during the course of the audit. And then at USA, there was 344,000 that was disclosed, and an additional 219,000 was identified during the course of the audit. And that was our analysis and summary of the audit outcome for the communication portfolio.
Margaret, thank you very much. Can I take it that we are not making comments at this stage? This is just a high-level view. All right, Mr. Kurwani.
You see, Chair, maybe we must sustain the presentation, but the importance of being shocked is to recover immediately, because you might have a cardiac arrest if you don't recover immediately. But, Chair, I think for us it will be difficult to try and engage with the document now. But what we wanted to request, Chair, we understand that we've got time pressure and everything. If it's possible that if you can just give us 10 minutes, we need to recover from the shock. We need that 10 minutes as an ANC. To engage on the shock so that we recover and be ready to take the presentation or continue with the presentation from DOC.
Are you asking for 10 minutes now?
10 minutes now, even before we comment and do whatever, just to recover from the shock, and then we'll come back and proceed.
Can I get you some sugar water then? Okay. Alright, there's a request that we adjourn for 10 minutes just to allow the ANC to discuss this. Is that in order? Thank you very much. Can we then adjourn for 10 minutes?
Non
Thank you very much for your patience. There's a matter that Ms. Nybert wants to clarify.
Thank you, Chief. Just want to get to the slide. Just want to clarify in terms of this, specifically in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We'll see it's only that small portion at the bottom that is reflected as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and that reflected 51,000. So there's just a concern that it's the fruitless and wasteful wasn't in the millions. It was only 51,000. It's the irregular that is the material amount. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I take it that we don't want to go into any discussions on this matter. It's it's background information for us to do our work properly in respect of all the entities in this particular sector. Can we then move on to the next item on the agenda? Dr. Viso, Acting CG, welcome to you and your team. Members, I think we've been observing a number of developments with respect to the department from a distance for some time. And literally from a distance when we were in the UK and Brazil, it is a matter of concern. Some of the things that have happened has, I think, been of concern to all of us. Today is our opportunity to get a full and thorough briefing from the department on what's the state of affairs, both in the previous or the last financial year and the current year, and for us to interrogate very carefully that information and to exercise our oversight role. We have, I think, quite an important responsibility. If we think that things are not working well, then it's our responsibility to ensure that we hold the officials and the administration to account. And that's really what this exercise is about. So I'm going to give you ample opportunity to express yourself, to ask whatever questions you want, and we've got, I think, up to 3 hours to take this discussion forward. So with those few introductory comments, I'd like to then hand over to Dr. Viso. You might want to introduce your team and then take us to the presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity to present here this morning our annual report and also a midterm report that will follow on that. Also, before I introduce the DOC team present here, I would like to tender the apologies of the Minister, who is on his way from Mexico, and the Deputy Minister, who at present is there. And also allow me to just acknowledge the presence here of the Minister's advisors, Mr. Archie Whitehead, and also the Chief of Staff in the Minister's in the Ministry. The team that we have here is quite a big team, but you know that we are all, many of us are acting, and we need to bring the team in order, you know, in terms of ensuring that we have all the institutional memory here. Ms. Rosie Sakasi, who is DDG ICT Infrastructure Development. Mr. Norman Muslele, who is acting as DDG Policy Development. Mr. Gift Pelez, who was in Mexico, is on his way. He indicated he will be here today. He's not here at the moment. Ms. Temba Piri, who is also in Mexico at the moment, represented here today by Angie Mahabodhi, and then Sam Vilakasi here, acting as DDG Finance and Enterprise Development, Mr. Farhad Osman, Strategic Planning and Monitoring, Ms. Percy Opela, the Chief Director of Communications, and Ms. Katie Squarey, Chief Director HR. Okay. I think the Honourable Chair has mentioned, you know, the negative engagement with the media over the past couple of weeks and months in terms of what's happening in the Department of Communications, and also negative perceptions that we have to deal with. But I think that today we can say that the top team in the department has succeeded in stabilizing the environment. I think we are a functional department. We productivity is on the increase. We're meeting targets. And I think there's just a general positive feeling emerging in the department that is, of course, very important in terms of service delivery. And, of course, we can also announce here that, you know, Monday, the department was, or South Africa was re-elected onto the ITU, International Telecommunications Union Council, which I think is very positive for the country. It puts us in a position where we can be at a coalface in terms of regulatory affairs, development affairs within the ICT sector. Honourable Chair, in terms of my presentation, I, with your approval, will regard the documents that we've delivered as read, and that I will then focus on key elements of the documents, and where possible, provide some context to those elements that we will identify. What we will do is to give you the first few slides of the presentation, and I will skip those. It was actually only to give you, to make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of what we're supposed to be delivering, in the department. We will then go through the six programs in the department, policy, infrastructure, international affairs, BNC, finance, and governance administration. And I will then give Mr. Senvelakasi the opportunity to get into more detail as far as the budget versus actual performance is concerned. Now, just to ensure that we're on the same page, perhaps slide four, just by way of introduction, to give you a sense of again, you know, what we're supposed to be doing in the DOC. Sometimes we find that, you know, the DOC is defined through or by cost to communicate issues, as if that's the only thing that we're doing. We're dealing with quite a wide variety of things, not only access and affordable access to ICT and ICT services, but we also have to provide leadership in a global sense, and I think our election to the ITU Council is an example of our leadership at a global level. We also have to deal with development and use of information communication technologies. But I think in terms of our mission, very, very important is that we have to build or lead the building of an inclusive information society and knowledge economy in the country. So I think the many activities that you see in this report in the end will can be mapped to these very important issues raised in our mandate, vision, and mission. If we can then go to slide 11 to deal with our program performance of the 2009-10 financial year. The first branch is the ICT policy development branch, which of course is very important at this juncture of our history in terms of developing the information society knowledge economy. And I think something that we have to focus on is our work on developing an integrated national ICT policy. Now, we have many policies, we have many acts on the book, but I think what we have to deal with is how do we integrate all of these things. We live in a world where we talk about convergence of technologies, convergence of devices, and I think it is now time that we really sit down and think very, very innovatively as to how we integrate all of these policies and strategies and action we have on the book to really position South Africa to engage with the future. And the DOC is about today, but it's also about the future and providing the foundation on which we can build a new order in terms of knowledge of economic development and other societal issues. So we've drafted a concept paper and a policy framework during the last financial year. So serious engagement has already started with issues related to such an integrated policy framework. I would also like to then refer you to slide 14. We have the item in terms of cost, quality and availability and the usage of ICTs. I think that we've actually, I wouldn't say done well, but I think we've done something in terms of reducing the cost to communicate, from a peak rate of 125 to 89 cents. Now, it's important also to understand that to lower the cost to communicate is not going to be an event. It is a very painful process, engagement with industry, and there is an ongoing process. Secondly, I think it's important that we just also report on the work that has been done in terms of the broadcast and digital migration. A Digital Tonga Council was formally launched by the Minister, who thereafter approved the establishment of a Digital Tonga as a government component in August 2009. But we also know that in November 2009, the Digital Tonga Council was dissolved because of conflict of interest within the council. The department developed also a draft scheme for ownership support. That is, has to do with the subsidization of set-top boxes. A draft STB manufacturing sector development strategy was developed and gazetted for public comment. Then I'll refer you to slide number 16. Where we talk about the corporatization of the Post Bank. During the financial year, the Post Bank Bill was approved by Cabinet, and in October 2009, and subsequently introduced to Parliament and debated in the Portfolio Committee on Communications. Slide 17, I think there's an item there that I think we need to also focus on in terms of policy development. I think hard work has gone into finding and getting synergy going between provincial governments, local governments in terms of their IDPs and what's happening at the national level. If we have to ensure that ICTs play a role in driving the economy and providing a foundation for a future information society knowledge economy, we have to make sure that we get all our people, all our provinces and local authorities to participate in this very important environment where ICTs play a role. Then we have on page 18 just a brief report also on the Moroka E-Skills Institute. You will perhaps know that in a recent report by the International Telecommunications Union, they've indicated that if we have to build an inclusive information society knowledge economy, we have to focus on three areas. Yes, we have to focus on infrastructure and access and affordability, but more importantly, we have to also focus on uptake and usage of those technologies and infrastructure and services. And very importantly, that we have to focus on skills development. And not only ICT skills or e-skills, but at a very high level, but we have to e-skill the entire nation so that we can become part of the emerging information society and knowledge economy. We've done some work and we will take this e-skills institute program further in future in terms of cabinet and established a legal entity. And the whole e-skills program is built on collaboration. We're working very closely with universities, with FET colleges, with industry, with universities around the world, so that we don't reinvent the wheel, but we can make use of existing capacity and resources around the country, and also to ensure that skilling is taking place not at one place, but in our regions, in rural areas. So we have a massive task in that regard, and multi-stakeholder partnerships for us are very important. And I think this whole idea about multi-stakeholder partnerships are also important. Now, other programs, for example, the Minister's specific or special program in Masinga, where we have to make sure that government is not doing these things on its own, but in collaboration with capacity in the industry, academia, and even in civil society. That's the only way that we can build this new economy and this new environment that we're talking about. I think it's also important, just on slide 19, to indicate that we have a very successful collaboration going between the East Coast Institute, Telkom South Africa, and the South Korean government. We've established a cutting-edge laboratory where we have offered already modules and courses in niche areas like embedded software development and systems development. Our next slide, 20, is the ICT infrastructure development branch, where I think the first very important program that we're dealing with there is about broadband. And we've developed a draft broadband policy and a draft national broadband strategy. And we have to also indicate that there are many very interesting broadband programs being implemented at provincial levels, local government levels. And what we're doing now is to really, on the basis of programs already running, to provide a national framework for broadband development in South Africa. So we're doing a very interesting exercise. It's really evidence-based policy development, and I think that is a new way of dealing with such issues. Also, I think what is very important for the country and for our people is the whole issue around cybersecurity. We know that that is an international problem at the moment. It's an issue that's being discussed right now at the ITU conference in Mexico. And we've drafted a cybersecurity policy as well as a working document on the cybersecurity implementation plan that was developed. And, you know, people will not utilize modern technologies and ICTs and the web and the browsers and the internet if they don't feel they're secure in doing that. And I think that's a serious matter for us as people who are advocating for the use of ICTs and modern technologies. So we're really trying to deal with that in a systematic and coherent manner. If we then can go to slide 22, just a brief reflection on the 2009 FIFA Confederations Cup delivery. I mean, we can now say that we've done that successfully in collaboration with our SOEs, we had the proper ICT infrastructure in place, the International Broadcasting Coordination Center was operational, and the work was well done, and as you have experienced. And slide number 23. I think focuses on another very, very important aspect, and that is the frequency spectrum that we have to manage in this country, especially now with the broadcast and digital migration process underway. The spectrum policy was tabled in Cabinet for approval 10 March 2010. There was this whole issue around the audit, and that was done, you know, revised terms of reference to audit bands between 500 and 20 megahertz and 20 gigahertz, which are needed for implementation of the broadband applications, was developed. Then on page 24, I think, something that's of concern to all of us is, again, how do we get our young people in schools to use modern technologies, ICTs, and there's a program going to connect Dylan Lady schools, and an audit was conducted to assess the state of readiness for connectivity in these schools in order to get, them connected and give them access to the internet and other modern ICTs that can be useful to the education environment. On slide 25, again, there is the connectivity plan that was finalized and approved by the Human Development Cluster. And the department is also engaging National Treasury and USASA with regards to utilizing the Universal Service Fund to fund the connectivity of schools. So that is, I think, very important, and unless we get that going, you know, we will not really get our young people and students involved in learning and thinking differently in this new world. Also important is the National Internet Policy on page 26. And, you know, this is also a global international debate as to how to manage the Internet and how to govern the Internet and policies around that. And a revised Internet policy was drafted, which takes into consideration other initiatives that support the realization of the Internet policy objectives. Then international affairs and trade. We are all aware of, you know, the number of undersea cables coming into South Africa. The one that we were more closely involved with is the Uhuru Net. Eight countries from Eastern and Southern Africa have ratified the Kigali Protocol in this regard. And the Umoja Net, which is the terrestrial network, the Uhuru Net is the undersea cable. We supported the feasibility study of the terrestrial network in Eastern and Southern Africa, which was carried out and was completed in June 2009. I think it's important then to just briefly refer you to our multi and bilateral engagement with other countries. I think on page 27, the AU ICT Ministerial Conference was hosted in November 2009, and the AU ministers adopted the Oliver Tambo Declaration as their collective position for the AU summit. And again, as we've indicated in our mandate or vision, that we need to play also a very strategic and effective role on the continent. And I think we seriously involved with issues in Africa, and also in the way that we determine items on the agenda for discussion in these countries. On slide 28, also when we deal with SADC, South Africa assumed the chair of SADC for the period between 2008-2009, and during the RSA chairperson's chairmanship, the minister chaired the 2009 SADC ICT ministerial meeting, which approved several key ICT projects for implementation. So again, we try in many of our engagements with other countries and in high-level meetings to make sure that we have tangible outcomes and not only participating in talk shops. On slide 29, I think it's important that we just refer to our bilateral relations with other African countries. We have finalized MOUs with Egypt and also Tunisia. And I think these MOUs are really the frameworks in the context within which we pursue projects and programs and exchange of ideas and knowledge. Maybe you're aware of the IPSA program, the India Gazelles of Africa initiative. And I think there are also many things, you know, being implemented. At the moment, we're engaging them around the refurbishment of computers, old computers, that we can distribute to to marginalized communities or to schools, and it did also create jobs. I think it's a very successful program in Brasilia, where they create quite a number of jobs and distribute computers to many people for free or at a minimal cost. Also to indicate other bilateral and arrangements. For example, we've signed an agreement with Cuba, in particular with a particular focus on software development, applications development, but also more importantly, we work with the Cuban University of Information and Communication Technology, and we work collaboratively, and we will work collaboratively soon with the Cuban University and the eSkills Institute that will pursue issues around eSkills. I mean, they have very interesting models and ways of skilling their people for the 21st century. Also with South Korea, we have a very important agreement with them. They have funded what we call the ITC Cooperation Center, of which our laboratory is one of those. We have engaged them on a variety of issues in e-government, in modern technologies. You see that in South Africa, we're still trying to get into the e-world. In South Korea and in Japan, they're still already talking about the U-world, the ubiquitous world. And I think that if we want to leapfrog into the future, we need to have good collaboration programs with countries like South Korea. Our international affairs and trade continues. If we look at, we also, you know, work with other international ICT institutions in terms of global governance. You know, the Universal Postal Union, the Post Office, and the ICASA, we engage with a number of international programs. Also, we have strategic collaboration programs, for example, with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD. We're not a member of the OECD, but we regard it as a country on the forefront of ICT development. So the OECD gave us observer status, and that is important because we engage them on a number of very interesting programs as far as the future of ICTs are concerned, industry. I think we can learn a lot from the European environment. Then on slide 31, again, just to indicate the work that we've done, that we're doing in terms of the Presidential National Commission in provinces. I think the PNC plays a role there in getting provinces like Limpopo, Northern Cape, and other provinces to start understanding and you know their own environments in terms of ICTs in different areas. You also know that the PNC, it was mentioned in the last presentation, the previous year, of that we need to look at the PNC in terms of the department. That is being considered now with the current institutional rearrangement that's happening in the department. Then on slide 32, just to refer you to the eSkills Council. The eSkills Council, it's actually a program that was previously linked to the Presidential International Advisory Council on Information Society and Development. That council has been reconstituted, and the minister is the chairperson of its council, and it's a council where we have representation from five other departments and key high-level or key senior people from industry. And I think that's an initiative to make sure that we deal with the e-skilling of people in the country in a coherent way, and that we have high-level political and industry buy-in. On slide 33, there are a number of specific projects that are being implemented by the PNC in terms of e-literacy training, website development, On slide 34, also the program on e-cooperatives, where young people are being given the knowledge and the know-how and the skills to be entrepreneurial, to develop enterprises. There's a very important National Digital Repository Program that is underway. And again, many young people are trained to do the work in that regard. It's also important that we have, from a government perspective, a good idea as to what is happening in terms of developing the information society knowledge economy. And there is an e-barometer program that is measuring our engagement or our programs in terms of giving people access to the internet, to modern technology. On slide 36, just to refer to you to the Intergovernmental Relations Forum. We don't have a presence with the Department of Communications in provinces, but the Intergovernmental Relations Act provides for a forum where the minister meets premiers and or members of the executive councils to discuss matters relating to ICTs and ICT programs, national ICT policy strategies, legislation, and how this should be implemented at the provincial and even local government level. Slide 37 also just to indicate our work has been done at municipal levels in terms of website development. Again, the people that we trained in the e-cooperatives are doing that kind of work. On slide 39, we then go to the ICT enterprise development environment, where we trying very hard to promote ICTs in small, medium, and micro enterprises, but also to support ICT SMEs. On that slide, just also to indicate to you that we're working closely with manufacturers in terms of the set-top box manufacturing program, and we've engaged them, and you know, we provide information to ensure that when the time comes, we have people in the country that can participate in the rollout of set-top box manufacturing, and in so doing create necessary jobs. Also on slide 59, we're doing a lot to also engage SMEs to access ICTs, and we've done so for example, 1,000 women contractors with grading levels 2 to 6 who identified and profiled in consultation with the Construction Industry Development Board, for them to utilize portals and websites to do their business and to get access to information. Page 40, just also to indicate to you that we're doing work in terms of ICT business linkages, and we've identified and profiled 15 such companies that we support. This branch is also responsible, and we'll talk about this later as well, responsibility for SOE oversight, and you've heard this morning, you know, the problems associated with our SOEs, and that is an important project that we're working on. It's to making sure that strategic plans are in place, aligned with government strategy, that we have the shareholder compacts analyzed and approved. The minister also instituted last year a turnaround task team for both Centec and the SABC to review the corporate plans. We are taking very seriously the annual reports of the SOCs, and in particular also corporate governance issues. Then slide 42 is just to also indicate to you that we have a very systematic approach to engaging with our stakeholders. We have an annual stakeholder engagement plan, and this also resulted in the minister successfully hosting the first ICT industry forum in October 2009. On slide 43, just a brief outline there of our gender representativity. We have achieved 41.57% gender representativity at SMS level and 2.6% of people with disability. Strategic planning and monitoring, and you will see the result of that later in my later presentation. I think we have a very structured environment that we've created to make sure that we understand and know exactly what's happening to our programs and projects that we're implementing, and we on time always with our strategic plans or annual reports that we have to do a table in Parliament. Our HR management on slide 45. I think that there is, the problem there is in terms of vacancies. We will discuss later as well a number of posts and the vacancies. It is a problem that we're facing and that we're dealing with. Also in the GNA cluster is the what you call a GDYC, gender, disability, youth and children. And what's important here is that the department has developed a national youth and ICT strategy and an implementation framework, and also a disability and ICT strategy and a draft implementation plan. And I think that is very important just to mention in that regard. I will now ask Sam Vilakazi to take us through the budget versus actual performance for the year 2009-10.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, as well as Honorable Members. I'm just going to do an overview of the budget for the financial year 9-10. In terms of what the department received and the expenditure. That will be on slide 48. In terms of the revenue, the annual appropriation for the financial year 9-10 was 2.4. The departmental revenue, 1.3. That mainly came from the collection of license fees. Direct exchequer receipts, 4.4, that came from Telkom special dividend, as well as the Telkom Vodacom transaction. That resulted into a revenue of 8.2. Current expenditure, compensation of employees, 129. Goods and services, 302. Interest and rent on land, that was just about 30,000. That was the interest paid on the Telkom amount, a late payment as a result of an investigation that was going on that transaction. Financial transactions in assets and liabilities, 82. That was mainly debts, excesses on vehicles, licenses, and losses written off. That gave us a total current expenditure of 432. Going to slide number 49, just in terms of what went to the entities, it was a figure of 1.8. On the assets, the two figures combined, 6 plus 3, that gives about 10. That's what was spent on the capital assets. That brought the total expenditure to 2.3. Moving on to slide number 50, in terms of what the department had to surrender to National Treasury or what was transferred to National Treasury, voted funds surrendered, it was 168. I must indicate that this 168 is actually a combination of both the saving as well as the under expenditure, but the bulk of it really is the savings. the departmental revenue that I spoke to of 1.3 and the direct exchequer receipt of 4.4. Total what was transferred to Treasury was 4.9. Going into the details in terms of what programs were allocated, there's about six programs. Administration was allocated 164. The expenditure there, 163, a saving of or underspending of 1.5. This was mainly due to the vacancies in that branch. In ICT International Affairs and Trade, allocated 49, actual expenditure of 44. There's a saving there of or underspending there of 4.6. This relates to the transfer of $3 million to NEPAD that was actually reprioritized. ICT policy development, 93, actual expenditure 70, there's a saving there of or underspending there of about 22. This is mainly also the reprioritization exercise on the funds allocated for program production. There was a decision taken internally to redirect these funds to a broadcasting digital migration. ICT enterprise development, 2 billion there, actual expenditure 1.9. There's a saving there of 118. And this is mainly due to the savings realized from the 2010 activities, the 96 million that should have been directed to Centec, as well as the 20 million Telkom. ICT infrastructure development, 90, the actual expenditure there of 74. The variance of 15 is mainly due to the delay in the 112. Which has since been sorted out. PNC, 31, actual expenditure, 25. There's a saving there, under spending there of 5.7. This was mainly due to some vacancies as well as some of the projects that were also delayed. That's what, if you look at the variances, that's where the 168 really. How it comes into the picture. Moving on to slide number 52, just basically the summary to indicate what was spent on current payments. The allocation was 459, actual 432. That gives you a variance of 27. The underspending of 27, like I did mention, that it was mainly due to some projects that were delayed as well as some vacancies that were not filled. Transfers and subsidies, the bulk of this 139 is savings, like I've already indicated, 96 million that should have been transferred through to Centec, 20 million, Telkom, as well as another 20 million Telkom, 20 million for program production, and 3 million. NEPAD funds. Payments for capital assets, allocation of 12 there, actual expenditure of 10, giving you, so basically this is how the 168 is arrived at. In terms of the breakdown for the what went to the entities, USASA allocated 33, the actual same figure. So basically if you look at all of them, except the Centec, the 96 million that I've just alluded to, as you can see that there was an actual transfer of 4 million and the 96 was a saving. The rest were actually transferred as planned. Going on the transfers, SABC 25 actual transfer, there was 5. There was actually an underspending there or saving of about 20 million. Community radio stations, yes, the same figure. Telkom, there was a saving there of about 20. Zerna domain, Merakai is the institute, and the asset seeker. The only saving or the underspending that we got there was 3 million for NEPAD. Moving on to the last slide, which is number 35, the department received a qualified audit opinion, as it was indicated earlier on by the AG. The qualification really relates mainly to payments that were made and contracts entered into where no procurement procedures were not followed. The total irregular expenditure incurred for the year under review is 24.2 million. I must indicate that 82% of this amount really relates to prior years. There are two sets of amounts here. There's about 15.7 million that relates to prior years, and 8.5 million that relates to the current year, also where procurement processes were not followed. The department has actually responded to try and rectify these issues. One measure that was taken was to look into the review of finance supply and supply chain management policies. There are disciplinary processes that are currently underway involving officials who were instrumental in initiating these transactions. The department has also taken a view that a training is required on PFMA, supply chain management, and budget processes for all senior officials to ensure that the organization is more or less at the same level in terms of, or everyone in the organization is at the same level in as far as compliance issues are concerned. It must also be mentioned that this kind of intervention will be a prerequisite prior appointment of officials as responsibility managers, because at times it shouldn't be assumed that the knowledge and understanding of PFMA and SCM and budget processes is always there, more especially when you, new officials are recruited. So it's important that everyone in the organization has got a fair understanding of what compliance with the legislation is all about. The other intervention, which was also identified as one of the challenges, was the capacity of internal audit and risk management unit. And action has been taken in this regard to make sure that the internal audit and risk management unit is functioning, and it has been fully capacitated to ensure that non-compliance is detected, reported, and dealt with on time. One other area is the supply chain management unit, where key and critical positions are currently being filled in to ensure that monitoring and compliance with legislation is dealt with. I must say that we are happy as a department that at the present moment, and this is evident from the 1st of April to or the performance from the 1st of April to the 30th of September, that there is full compliance with all the legislation. There is zero tolerance for non-compliance. Policies are in place, and we have zero irregular expenditure as you're speaking. That simply shows that we are taking issues of non-compliance very serious. And where officials are found to have transgressed the law, the department is actually ensuring that actions are taken. And hence, when I spoke about the 24 million, that there are currently processes in place to make sure that where the law has been broken, corrective steps are taken. Thank you.
The last presentation is the mid-year review. That is a separate document. On page two, by way of introduction, is just to indicate to you, you know, that our strategic plan and our programs are in line with the medium-term strategic framework to a large extent. Just also to mention to you at this point in time that we have a total number of 135 targets, and I think there is a bit of a problem also in view of our human resource capacity in the department, and you've seen in our annual report that the number of the number of areas there was an indication of human resource capacity problems. Our strategic plan is also in line with what has been promised in the minister's budget speech, vote speech, also the 2010 estimates of national expenditure, and of course, very importantly, the minister's performance agreement and his delivery agreement as well. Then it's also important just to indicate that for each of these targets, we have business plans and programs, progress against milestones are monitored on a quarterly basis, and we can therefore put to you today a report on the first two quarters and the way that we have measure our delivery. Now, the first slide, number three, actually gives us an indication as to where we stand at this point in time in terms of delivery. 39% of our programs are on target, are on track. 55% are delayed or in progress, and we have 6% of targets where there's no progress. And I will just refer you to slides 14 to 24, where we have provided detail in terms of these three categories. Specifically, and give you specific information on the programs and projects that are either on track, delayed, or where there is no progress. Slide four is just to give you a sense of progress to date in our legislative program. As you know, we've dealt with the post bank bill very successfully. It's currently being deliberated on by the NCOP's Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. Then we're working on the CASA Amendment Bill. We're still working on the Integrated ICT Policy Framework that I referred to earlier on. We're working on the Public Service Broadcasting Bill. We're going out for a second round of consultation this month in order to reignite public discussion on the bill. And then, of course, we've drafted the ECA Amendment Bill, and it's published for public comments. Now, perhaps just to indicate here, I think we're experiencing problems in this regard in view of the fact that we sometimes do not deal properly with the consultation process. Many of our acts, are developed without any proper green paper, white paper process. And I think that is a serious problem, that we jump into a legislative process but don't have a proper green paper and white paper processes, and then you have to always have interventions later on, and it makes the legislative environment very messy. And I think that is something that we have to consider as a matter of urgency. I think what we also have to do, and it is built into the progress we're making here, is to engage on a review of the ICT industry. I think we need to have a good understanding of what is happening in the industry, where industry is going, and to proactively develop our policies and our legislative frameworks. And that is being done also now to provide a better and a more sound foundation for legislation to be developed in the future. I think what is not in that slide is actually also the cost to communicate. I think we are in a process of deepening the debate on cost to communicate. It's not on the slide, but I think I just want to add to that. As I've said, we need to deepen the debate. I think the cost to communicate is too much a debate around how much you pay for a phone call. I think the debate should also involve really issues around building an information society knowledge economy. And I think we need to start advocating, and perhaps one the DOC should get involved in that and advocate for ICTs and broadband in particular to become a basic human right or a legal right. I think that it has happened in Finland, where from the 1st of July, access to broadband is actually a human right, and is dealt with in the same way as electricity and water and so on. It's the infrastructure of the future. And I think being involved with legislation and policy and strategy development, I think that should be a clear guideline and framework for what we're doing. I think it's also important that we, and we will start with that, we have a person in the department, we had a person that dealt with analyzing the impact of our legislation and laws. It's not happening, and we're about to again appoint someone to really start here, but if we have an ECA, how does it contribute to dealing with the digital divide, impact on the economy? So that is not seriously undertaken in a very systematic way. So there are a number of issues that we have to deal with in order for our legislative program, our policy development to be more problem oriented, and in order for us to deal with the growth in the economy and society and creating the jobs. In terms of infrastructure development, I think that the DTT infrastructure rollout, the idea is that we have 60% of population coverage by 2011. I think with Centec we have reached 33% population coverage at this point in time. Spectrum pricing methodologies. A research report was compiled and appropriate pricing methodologies analyzed for South Africa. Policy directions on spectrum pricing were also developed, and in the newspapers there were issues around this and so on, but I think from our side we have the necessary directions in place. Broadband. We have drafted broadband legislation, and provincial and municipal guidelines have been developed, and I think this is very, very important because broadband rollout in South Africa is actually happening uncoordinated at this point in time. Very good programs and projects in provinces and at local government level, but not coordinated, and we have to do this broadband national strategy as soon as possible. National Internet Governance, a draft policy was finalized. It was resolved that the following policy issues will be taken forward: IPv4, IPv6, migration, and geographic domain names. Slide 6, again, just to refer you to the successful hosting of a 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup. And the successful rollout of ICT infrastructure in support of that, and it was clear that we had a very, very successful World Cup, and without ICTs that would not have been possible. But even more importantly is what are we doing with the technologies that we have that's now left with us, and we've developed 2010 Football World Cup legacy plan, and that is being implemented at the moment. Consultations with host cities have been concluded in terms of ownership of these legacy technologies. Identified equipment will be redeployed to our cities. Also, the schools can, as part of the legacy, will benefit. We're investigating the scope, interoperability, operations, and maintenance of legacy redeployment. In terms of our international programs, what we can say is that we've signed, and I've referred to that also in the annual report, the signing of the South African Cuba MOU in ICTs. And then also, also very importantly, is the position papers that DOC has developed over the last few months in terms of our engagement with countries in SADC, the AU. I think that, again, indicating the leadership role that we play in many areas of ICTs on the continent. I think it's, if you go to slide number 8, SOE oversight. This is very important to us. I think we are aware of the problems that our SOEs are facing, and sometimes it's really a corporate governance issue. And in terms of corporate governance, it's sometimes mainly about non-compliance with legislation, not having the right committees, not having the right processes in place, and I think that there are serious concerns, as I've said, regarding governance, regarding the viability of business cases, where we find that sometimes, there are business ventures and not very successful. And then also strategic and operational effects in terms of delivering on developmental issues. So the department is currently really taking its task in terms of SOE oversight very, very seriously. There is at the moment, for example, as far as the SDBC is concerned, a monitoring task team in place. They've met for quite a number of times, and this task team is about to deliver its report very soon to the minister. We have regular bilateral meetings, the minister with the boards of the SOEs. That is held bi-monthly. And we have now also agreed with the SOEs that the Director General and the Acting Director General will meet with SOEs on a bi-monthly basis to really look in a serious way at corporate governance issues that will ensure the proper functioning of our SOEs. We're also looking at the moment, developing guidelines for the remuneration of boards of SOEs and also the Council of ICASA. I think there's a wide variety of remuneration packages in the different SOEs, and I think we need to just, get a handle on that as well, and we're doing that investigation at the moment. We're also undertaking a review of financial controls in USASA and MISA and ICASA on the basis of our oversight role. We're also reviewing articles of association of the SOEs to comply with law and best practices. Slide number 9. We're taking the quarterly and annual reports of the SOEs very seriously. We're analyzing them, and we then identify problems and so on that we can provide early warning and feedback to these SOEs, and even also to advise the minister in this regard. We're monitoring compliance, as I've said, of SOEs with legislative mandates and requirements in good corporate governance practices. Very importantly, we're facilitating alignment of SOEs' plans with government priorities. And I think sometimes there's a disjuncture there, and we're looking now in a very serious way in getting the DOC and its SOEs to look at the future in the same way. Then, I mentioned that the ministerial task team that was appointed and is about to deliver his report. Then, we are on page 20, on page 10, a few very specific programs that are being implemented, and I can just refer you to also to the ICT Rural Development Strategy. There is a first attempt at understanding how ICTs can actually contribute to rural development. How do we get rural communities and rural economies to utilize ICTs effectively? The BDM, the Broadcast and Digital Migration, the Digital Dzonga has been reappointed and reestablished and is functional. It was done about a month ago or so, or 2 months ago, and we're in a process to appoint staff there to support the Dzonga in its operations. We have our BDM strategies have been finalized. The issue here is that we will only know in November whether, you know, in terms of the standards, it is, you know, for SADC. I mean, they have there's an agreement that SADC will come up with a consensus decision as to what standard will be used. And the agreement is that their decision will be made public in the month of November. We already, you know, have programs and processes and projects in place post-November. Once we know what a standard will be, we will immediately proceed with the SADC conformance scheme and all the related matters as far as SDB manufacturing is concerned and other issues related to the broadcast and digital migration strategy. To conclude, Honorable Chairperson, I think just briefly two slides on the key challenges that we're facing in the department and then also what we're doing about it at this point in time. We've been through a very difficult period the last few months. Part of our problem of the delayed delivery of projects can be attributed to long and prolonged internal decision-making processes. We have to work through anything between 500 and 800 submissions, including submissions for tenders and so on, that were in a department. So we have dealt with those now, and we at last dealing with current submissions. And I think that has a very positive impact on delivery. You've seen in our documents, and perhaps later we'll see also the impact of that on our spending pattern. So I think we coming to grips with the issues that were really negative, that have negative impact on delivery in our department. We have human resource capacity constraints, and I think that's a result of a number of things. It's the moratorium on appointments that we're now dealing with and identifying critical posts to be filled. We have a severe problem regarding people that were suspended, people that were moved around in the department, sometimes putting in positions for which they were not qualified. So the human resource environment, we come into grips with that as well. And we will soon, within the next week or two, advertise quite a number of critical posts in a department. You perhaps are aware of the institutional review happening, but we've identified posts that we can fill irrespective of the outcome of the review. The review, the institutional review of the department will in any event also feed into a strategic session that we will have within the next, within 2 weeks, so that we can really come to grips with what we have delivered in the next financial year in a more strategic and focused way. We had to deal with departmental instability, and I think we can report that, you know, that we've dealt with the staff morale in the department. I think people are back at work. We're delivering, we're producing, and I think there is just another different spirit there in terms of what we have to deliver, with, of course, positive impact on production and delivery. We had a problem with, as I've indicated, suspension of key senior managers. Some managers in the past 3-4 months resigned, and we will try to fill those positions as soon as possible. We also had a problem, I think we should just mention this and give you the proper context, because of the situation in the department, we had different factions in the department with negative impact on delivery, and I think we're dealing with that now in a coherent way, and I think we've resolved many issues. Also, the ad hoc redeployment of staff within the Department of Communications had a severe negative impact on service delivery, and we have rectified that to a large extent as well. And I think there was really in the department a fearful environment, and I think people are at the moment much more relaxed. And all of that, all of these challenges, of course, had a severe impact on projects and related expenditure trends, as can be seen in that first slide where we look at the diagram. Now, what it is that we've set out to do in order to deal with these issues, I think it was very important for myself and my colleagues, senior colleagues, to do our best to stabilize the environment. I think we have a stable environment at the moment, conducive to good work and good production. We have brought back a proper governance environment. We have the Ministerial Executive Committee, but then also within the department we've brought back a proper governance environment with Executive Committee, with top management meetings, with branch management meetings, and we have also reconstituted the Departmental Budgetification Committee that was actually constituted in a way that was not compliant with the Public Finance Management Act. As I've indicated, we're about to recruit staff for critical posts. We're working towards the conclusion of the organizational review that will feed into our next strategic session. And I think it's important also to understand that we sometimes don't agree with the terms of reference for the organizational review, but I think in a broader context, institutional review is not an event, it's a process. So we will see, you know, what is coming out of this review and in terms of what we envisage must be delivered in the next financial year. And of course, as I said, we have prioritized our SOE oversight role. And in view of all of this, we're seriously involved in building internal capacity in the department. Like Mr. Willekas has indicated, we train supply chain management staff. We're dealing with corporate governance issues, the King III report, and how that will impact on the government environment. We're working now with industry on ICT 2020 vision. I've mentioned the review of the sector, but also that 2020 vision will have to include uptake and usage of ICTs and also skills development. We are about to release a national e-skills plan of action soon that will be the foundation and framework for e-skilling the nation. And I think in view of the ICT 2020 vision, I think it's a very important initiative, especially in view of a new program to develop policies and strategies, not only for a year and now, but also to be proactive in terms of our policy development, in terms of the future, in terms of emerging technologies. I think that that we 10 to 15 years behind some of the leading countries in the world in terms of the use of ICTs. And I think with this 2020 vision, we will understand what is happening in the world, and also for us to understand how we can leapfrog. In the information society knowledge economy, we can leapfrog if technologies are available. It depends on how we get our own ducks in a row. Then lastly, the last slide is just to conclude by saying that yes, we're dealing with underspending, but there are good reasons for that. And I think that, you know, where we now have, and you will see just in a minute, where we now have a 26% spend, I think with the signing off of submissions and taking things through the tender committee and getting invoices back, I think we, at this point in time, about 35%. And that is on track for this time of the year. So we will make sure that we really, you know, speed up our delivery, speed up our spending, so that we do not give money back to Treasury. Lastly, Honourable Chairperson, just Mr. Vilakazi again to give you a brief overview of our spending patterns at this point in time.
Thank you, Tindiji. Okay, I will run very quick. The expenditure for 2010-11 to date, current payments allocation 502, expenditure 135, transfers and subsidies 1.6. There we've just done 423. That's 25%. Overall, the budget is 2.1. Actual expenditure to date, 560, 26%. The acting DG has already indicated that if you factor in the commitments, that pushes up the figure to 26%. In terms of the programs, you would actually notice that they are at different levels. But I must indicate, for example, if you look at infrastructure, ICT infrastructure development, the 180 there, projections 79, actual 20. 11%. The bulk of this amount, the 180, relates to the 112 project, and a decision has actually been made on this. So we're likely to see spending going up. Other programs, they are more or less on track. On the entity side, you'll actually notice that most of the entities are on track, except just one or two there and there. I think it's NAMISA and SABC, but we have since rectified the situation. So basically, in as far as spending is concerned, we are actually on top of things. The acting DG has just indicated that one of the problems that we had was around the delays on projects, prolonged decision making, and so on. That is the thing of the past. Things are moving. The finances are in order. There is compliance all the way.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for fairly comprehensive presentation on the past and the current financial year. Ms. The tea and coffee is getting cold, so can we reconvene at 11:45, please?
This is my first briefing by the department, and a baptism of fire truly is.
Chair, I feel very sorry for the acting DG, because your honesty gets you into trouble, unfortunately, because the one good thing is you don't try and hide anything, and for that I thank you. You have pointed out all the problems that are in the department. I think the first thing I'd like to comment on is my good friend Professor Naba, always used to say in the Justice Department, when there were lists of acting, that this isn't Hollywood. And I couldn't agree with him more. And I think it's frightening how many acting positions there are, including the fact that we have an acting DG. And I think that when you look at things going wrong throughout low morale, of course people have low morale because they don't know how long they're going to be around for. And of course there's a lack of leadership because people, you know, it's difficult to plant your roots if you don't know that you have a permanent position. And I think that's terribly worrying. And I've consulted with my colleague, Honourable Van den Back, and he tells me that this is a problem that's been around since the beginning of the term, is this, the you know, all these acting positions. And I think that's very, very worrying. Another thing, the suspension of key senior managers, what the DG, acting DG, explained to us was that people were appointed that weren't fit for purpose. You know, as cool as it sounds, I think whoever appointed them should also be suspended, because what are you doing appointing these people in the first place? Because clearly you're not fit for purpose if you don't know who in your department should be fit for purpose. So I think it's a top-down approach that's really getting everyone into trouble here. And I think that some serious accountability needs to be taken into account here. And then, Chair, I could go on for hours, as all of us could, and you know that we have a short time span, so I'm going to just touch on those two things. And then two other things regarding technology. Technology is power. And if you want to empower our country and you want to empower our citizens, you teach them how to use technology. Especially in rural areas, that's the only way people come up to standard with people that live in developed cities and are used to using the internet. And I take, for example, my mother, who 6 months ago didn't know how to use the internet, and now she does, and she is completely empowered. She's gone from someone who used to count on me to do her internet banking, for example, to being completely empowered. And that is all South Africans should be empowered with regards to internet. And I agree with you with regards to Finland and how far advanced they are in their approach to technology. And I couldn't agree more that access to technology and access to broadband in the day and age that we live in now is a basic human right. And recently in England, I noticed that houses that have broadband have become the norm rather than the exception. Everyone has access to Wi-Fi. People are using Wi-Fi on the trains in public areas, and that shows a developed, you know, a developed country. And South Africa, we should be there already. And in line with that, Chair, allow me to finish with this. Very worryingly, the DG says, and I agree with him, that we are 10 to 15 years behind developing countries. And then we look at the financial statements that were just given to us, and only 11.6% of the allocated budget was used with regards to development of information and communication technologies. Chair, that's scandalous.
Kulwane and Julie, that's Sterling.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe, Chair, I'll start by saying I'm not on the point of view that we're going to be able to deal with this matter or this report within this hour or so which was given. The possibility should be that maybe we'll begin with them when we come back. But instead of starting at 2:30, maybe continue from 2:00 so that we finalize whatever issues might be remaining with the OC, because we are not in a position to rush anything. If there's anything I think we have miscalculated, we should have given them the whole day or 2 days, because we must deal with these matters once and for all, because they've been with us for quite some time and so on. So I'll appeal, Chair, that if we don't finish, we don't have to rush people, but the possibility of doing that. The second issue, Chair, is that when we requested the caucus in the morning, wanted to interact with the Auditor General report, but we didn't want to ask them questions. Finally, we just said we need also, as we deal with the entities as they'll be coming, and even DOC, just to be a point of reference, because what it does is just summarizes the annual reports as they are currently and so on. Just as a point of reference and so on, so that we, from time to time, we can just look into it. That's why we didn't have much interest in terms of engaging with the document in the morning, but we must acknowledge that it's of great assistance to summarize the issues on the annual reports and moving forward and so on. But the issue which I just wanted to start with in terms of trying to engage on this report is that I think when it comes to the mission and the vision of what the department is supposed to do, there seems to be a clear understanding. And everyone agrees that indeed, if we make commitments, whether your Millennium Development Goals, which we need to achieve and so on, we're clear as a country in terms of where do we want to go with ICT, around the issues of ICT and building the information society. And indeed, the mission and the vision seek to talk to that. So we're clear at the broader level, it would seem, as a country, where do you want to go? But the problem starts when you need to put the wheels, which will move you from point A to point B to achieve that mission and the vision and the policy statement, broader statement, or the view of the country in terms of what you need to do, which is the department. We're supposed to be the head which makes sure that we move to where we want to go. I think that's where the problem is. I won't dwell with the issues already raised in terms of these other things of your vacancies and so on. But the first issue which I wanted to engage at, broadly as the acting DG has raised, is raising a very critical matter. If you look in terms of some of these countries which are succeeding in terms of building this information society, one critical area is how do you mobilize various stakeholders to talk one language. If you go to Brazil, the industry understands, government understands, department understands what is the strategic view of government moving forward on ICT. Everyone is talking one language. Now, are we in that situation in South Africa? See, those are the questions which we need to start to raise so that we don't have just a mission and a statement which does not talk to the actual what is happening on a daily basis moving forward and so on. Now, if you look into that, you'll see that there is a gap. And the acting DG today is saying, part of the problem we have chosen, you know, there is this program which you call Short Left, was in SABC 2. I'm not advertising SABC anyway. But it was a program which you call Short Left, how do you know your country to visit, you know, and so on, as a tourist within South a tourist in South Africa. The issue here is that the DG is saying, part of the weakness, we have abandoned the basic principle. You see, this democracy of ours was founded on the issue of a participatory, it's called participatory democracy, where people participate in shaping where do you want to go as a country. The DG is saying we've abandoned that in most of the recent things which we are doing, whether it's your public service broadcasting amendments which are still coming, whether it's the ICASA amendment, where any amendments which are coming, there's no broader policy vision where we're going as a country, but we're amending without having that broader policy. Now, the issue which I want to take, what does that mean, acting DG? Will that mean there will be a review of those processes? Because, you see, if we want to agree that somewhere, somehow we went wrong, that's why we seem to be missing the vision. What does that statement mean, Chair? Does it mean we're going to go back and review those processes so that we start processes which is going to encompass all the stakeholders, everyone understanding the industry, how do we want to move forward? That's the first question, Chair, on the broader level, which I just want to understand, Chair, so that we are clear about exactly what is happening. I know that you've got your ICASA amendment coming, your ECA and so on, but will that happen in a vacuum or it will happen in a policy framework? It's unfortunate that the policy section of the department itself does not seem to have a tail and a head. We're supposed to be driving these processes. But that's the first question, say, which one we want to be look at. Secondly, it would seem the department has also understood that they are missing the point. At one point, now they have appointed an organizational review. There seem to be some work there, organizational review, what the DG is talking about and so on. Now, But on the same time, you say you might not agree with the terms of reference of that organizational review, which is going on. What does that mean? Or what are you telling us? You see, I'm raising that because we don't want another irregular expenditure a few years down the line. We are spending money in that process. You are saying at one point you don't agree with the terms of reference of that particular process which is going on currently as we are speaking. You are an acting DG. The buck stops with you administrative terms of the PFMA. You are accountable for those funds which are being spent currently as we are talking. But you are not agreeing with some of the terms of reference. Is it worth it to continue that process? Or you have to put in a process which seeks to agree or seeks to cure the weaknesses to meet the broader policy objective you want to achieve as a department and so on. I hear what you are saying, that it will assist in certain instances. You see, you can't put a process and spend public money in a process where some of those things will assist. Want a process is credible, which we know as we're presenting that that process is going to yield results which will be useful for the department to meet its objection moving forward. It can be by chance that some, what happened if that some become 5%, 95% is a wasted money and so on. So like one friend of mine at one point was saying, we must learn to confront our ghosts. So if this is the ghost, it's the ghost which we must confront. We need to be clear on that one. It can't be. We can't have a process which does not have credibility within the department itself. It can't be. If that process does not find credibility within yourself as a department, we must be clear what you want to do. But we cannot just allow that process to continue with the hope that some of its recommendation will help and so on. That's the second issue, Chair, which I just wanted to raise in the second instance. The other thing, Chair, you see, when you go through this report, and I appreciate one of the honorable members here was saying for the first time the department seeks to be honest about its weaknesses and so on. And he's saying you are so honest in such a way that you are not even reporting outcomes, you are reporting progress and processes. But you're supposed to report outcomes, but you are reporting processes. Not outcomes of your program. So it's fine, that's all part of the honest, which I agree with the honorable member, which is saying and so on. But I'm saying, Chair, part of the problem which we are having here is that, look, the acting DG, what I like with him is that he understands this thing. He's talking about your King 3 Commission report. There is 2 and 1. And part of the capacity of the department is to internalize those commissions' report. Because unfortunately, you've got SOEs which are attached to you, which are supposed also to execute their duties in line with those King commissions' report. And you have put it very well to say you've got the weaknesses on the also SOEs and the other things. Now, in both reports, yes, my difficulty. You see, Chair, maybe sometimes we confuse the responsibility of the SOEs themselves and the responsibility of the department. I should have thought that this report also is going to cover about the SOE. It might not be in detail, Chair. I'll give you one reason why I'm asking that. If you read those King Commission's report, which the acting DG is talking about, you've got one SOE who has just moved towards contravening those things. I will say, you see, I don't want to say when that SOEs come to deal with it as if it's their responsibility. We've got a shareholder here, which is you, DOC. And we're silent about that thing. You want us to engage those things when that SOEs come, but for us, it's your responsibility. You are accountable here about even the activities of those SOEs. Now we are silent about those SOEs, what is happening. So it's like you are contracting out your responsibility as a department to share manage those SOEs to themselves when they come to appear before us. And I don't think it's correct.
I don't think it's correct. They must come and deal with their issues, but you've got the responsibility as a shareholder. How do you do oversight? What become your intervention when those things are happening and so on? So that we don't ourselves deal with the SOEs as if it was their responsibility or those sports and so on, but you yourself, you must be able to tell us what is happening with your SOEs, what is your capacity, but you have indicated about your capacity. It's just that both your reports, your annual report and the current activities does not reflect the challenges in the SOE. So if you just read the report, you must just think that no. There is a problem with the capacity in the department, but everything is well in the SOEs. That's what the report is presenting. Does not present that in the SOEs there are problems. I think that's one issue which we also needed to deal with and so on. But look, Chen, I'm sure so all of us we have issues which we want to raise. But I just wanted to raise those key issues, Chen, not the detailed ones. On the issue of the policy front, on the issue of the ongoing work in the department to restructure or to do whatever with the department, but not being clear what will be the outcome. Because if you are hesitant about that outcome, that becomes a problem. So, and also the issue of your role as a department, as a shareholder to this SOE. It's not clear on your report. I understand what you're supposed to do, but your report does not tell us anything. It's like you contracted out that responsibility. It's no longer belonging to you and so on. The last issue, Chair, will be one of the irregular expenditures. You see, when you read the report, Chair, the annual report, then someone must explain. A person is in charge of your finances. Things go horribly wrong. As the report are saying, people are not reporting even irregularities in terms of whatever they're supposed to report. You reach an out-of-court settlement. What does that mean? Where is the seriousness of dealing with the financial issues? I'm just asking. Because that's what the report is saying. You reach an out-of-court settlement where finances are involved and you've got irregular expenditures before us. Who must we hold accountable? To be honest, because I just don't understand. I would suppose that the necessary processes have to take its course. But when I just read the report, Chair, in passing, you'll see that people were involved with the finances. Some of them, they've just been reached out-of-court settlement. I don't understand even how does it reach the out-of-court settlement and so on. But what does that mean? And are you serious about dealing with these irregularities? Or we are just dealing with it for the sake of dealing with it because anyway, we're going to ask questions. But things have happened. And someone must explain, sir, if these are the ghosts of the past, like my friend used to say, but what is happening with these current irregularities which is happening now, what course of action you are taking? Because it's not only the previous one. So you cannot say it was the previous financial. Now, as we are talking, you've got irregular expenditure. Currently, as we are speaking, in this current financial year, what course of action has been taken? You must be clear and detailed about those course of action in terms of what exactly has happened. So that we are clear about these issues, we are engaging about these issues. We don't want to come back later, then there is a problem. The last point, sir. I think, DT, you must be honest on this one. Do you have, or oh, yes, be honest, Master. You must be honest about this one. You see, Chair, at one point, the good thing in this committee, especially on the ANC component, you've got people who have been with this committee since for the past 10 or more than 10 years. And report has been coming to us as a committee, although I was not there at one point. And good things has been reported, good things, development, where we are going and so on. But it starts to appear that we are more deceived than given the reality of what is happening in the department. we have been living under a wrong assumption that the department is going to another direction, whereas in reality, it's going to the opposite. Because if you can go and get all the strategic plans of the department and put it here today, and look where the department is, there is no link. The strategic plan up going that way, the department is moving to another direction. Now, I'm raising this question, acting DG, not necessarily directed to you, but I think you should be able to get some sense now because you have been acting for some time. Do you have personnel with what it takes for the department to achieve its mandate? I think that's the question. And acting DG, you are not going to let it go. Because where we stand, acting DG, is that we need even a skill audit in this department. Do we have the right people in this department who've got what it takes, what the department needs to succeed? Or we've got warm bodies. I'm not saying these people are warm bodies. I'm trying also to be careful because there are same people who are currently working in the department and producing whatever to be produced. But I'm saying, acting DG, I'll be failing in our responsibility if we're not asking this frank and open question. Does we have personnel in this department who understand what this department is all about? Or we've got warm bodies who push papers every day just to continue working? Because we must answer that question. And where it's possible, acting DG, we would love to see a skill audit in this department. Whether this process is busy, we will be able to see where the department wants to go, what it takes, what is the skill requirement around that particular issue. So until we deal with these issues honestly, we'll just be running around on cycles. You have your PNC, which seeks to be a coordinating structure. See, when we're dealing with the debate, we were clear that the PNC need to be reviewed. You said in passing, maybe that process will deal with that. But you look at your report, the PNC continue to be just a body which is coordinating. I don't know what it's doing, just coordinating and spending and other things and so on. So, but to be honest, acting DG, we'll need a response to that question so that we are clear ourselves in terms of your capacity as a department, so that if there is no capacity, you are vigorous in terms of the training program, those who can be trained. Because ICT is not, once you sleep for 2 hours, then when you wake up, 100 things that happen. So whether people will be trained and so on, but we need that view, that particular report, DG, and your honest assessment to us as we have been honest. My story has been saying that you are honest, but we need that honesty so that we know that as you live here, you've got the capacity to go and do what we want you to do. Which we'll come back to it later anyway, after we've responded to this question, on what we want you to go and do. Otherwise, I'm just depressed, to be honest. I'm just depressed. If I had the doctor nearby, I should have just went and get some tranquilizers so that I can just be calm and be able to follow the processes. Thanks.
Ms. Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I believe the time has actually come for very, very broad openness about what we see. And I think several members have expressed disappointment. What I see at the moment is a department in deep, deep crisis. And if this department is in deep, deep crisis, South Africa is in crisis, because this is the industry that can take the initiative to contribute to economic growth as much as 1% annually to a country such as ours. And if that is not the focus of this department, to see where are the blockages, what are we supposed to do, what is our focus, what is crippling us? But if you lose sight of that vision of what you can do to bridge the digital divide, to give people access to information via broadband, etc., if we do not make progress with that in the next couple of months and seriously refocus, this department is letting the country down. And I want to say that instead of
taking off last year. We were very hopeful. Instead of taking off, I must be very frank with you. I feel the department has imploded. It has imploded. And I understand the difficulties that you've had. But I fear, and I want to align myself with what Honorable Kulamani has said, I fear there's a serious leadership problem in the department. Whatever portfolio is managed through a department, you have people who need, who must have the necessary technical skills, but ultimately you must also have managers. You must have financial managers. You must have program management. You must have goals that are realistic to achieve. And I want to mention one. You know, to have set down a goal, and that's why also you are demoralized, of 100% municipal websites up and running, and you report none. It's crippling. It's crippling everybody's enthusiasm. So, leadership is necessary to stop pretending that you have the requisite skills, the HR capacity and all of that, and to say, we are in crisis, let's admit it. Now, thanks to Dr. Vesa, I think he said that, maybe not as dramatically, but I think to a certain extent he said it. I think he said something when he moved in, he said it was a sinking ship, if I can recall what he said. And there was actually blame. He was blamed for making such a pronouncement. But we now understand why he said that. I want to say, where do we start? If we know that we are 39% on track for the program, if we know that we have a 30% vacancy rate, I want to align myself again with Honorable Gulwani. It's not only filling positions. It's putting people, it's selecting horses for courses. And that is my main concern. This organizational review process that you are embarking upon, are you also conducting a skills audit in the process? Do you evaluate where the people are who could fill in specific positions to take you further? Because if you look at the AG's report, and I mean, sometimes we think about the AG's report as simply, you know, figures, irregular expenditure here, nice little thing there, etc. But ultimately, it's about value for money government. And in this case, it is a strategic department, not as much a delivery department, but it's a department that must, through its influence in the sector, dictate the outcome with role players, such as state-owned entities, such as the ICT sector out there. And the issue is, if you do not demonstrate the leadership and the ability to manage yourself as a department, you will never have the credibility out there to really be regarded as a department that is leading the ICT sector in South Africa. So I want to say the following. Please, where do we start? I would like to suggest that I believe it's time to get your own house in order. You're doing it from what we can understand. You're trying your levelest. However, please consider what Honorable Gulwani has said about, do we have the necessary people in place that can lead the department? Secondly, do we have the leadership? If we look at the AG's report, it's very clear. It's very clear. They're speaking of the necessary systems, risk, identification, fraud prevention, and all of that. But they're also saying drivers to improve audit outcomes, financial and performance management. And that's why I'm saying sometimes you only think about it as figures, financial management figures, but it's also performance outcomes that you're driving through this. If you look at the heading, proper record keeping, adequate systems, etc., I think we have serious problems. But there's something that they also mention, and that is on slide 5, and that is the tone at the top. Unless we have in the top leadership an appreciation of the oversight responsibility that they have to get the department back on track, but also to get the SOEs. And I had it listed, but Honorable Gulwani has dealt with your role as far as the SOEs is concerned. not just meeting with them bi-monthly, etc., it's actively overseeing that they are doing what they should to get the performance outcome. And we have huge SOEs, such as the SABC, in deep crisis. Also, ICASA. ICASA has had repeated qualified audits over the past couple of years. So clearly, also in those SOEs, we have leadership crisis. The SABC has a capacity and a leadership crisis. And so does ICASA. So please, look at that. And then the second point that I want to make, the process, if you can include in your process also the audit skills, the skills audit, and you could then say, has it not become necessary to reprioritize your program activities and reprioritize your expenditure accordingly? I feel that you have 6 programs, but it is somehow uncoordinated. Do we have to really, the outcomes in the international? You know, is it not just overseas trips, attending conferences, coming? What is the input into those international conferences? Are we really projecting South Africa as a leader, or are we just attending? And what are we bringing back to South Africa? How has it been possible for us during the past couple of years, 5, 10 years, to have lost our position in terms of an industry leader in the sector? So why are we participating, throwing money at that program, but what does it help us to achieve? So reprioritize programs and reprioritize expenditure accordingly. If it is necessary, get management consultants back in. And let's rather focus on identifying a suitable structure for this department and going through a process to really take up this department's role as a strategic leading department in this country. In fact, I would like to suggest that it actually be made a sort of a presidential project to really get ICTs off the ground, to link it up with a specific focus. That is what countries such as South Korea has done. That's what Brazil has done. They've taken the industry forward. They've invested. Now, what are we doing in South Africa in terms of development of skills? Do we have a database of our universities? Do we interact, this department, do you interact regularly with them? Do you ask them that they set goals for also investing their skills in school programs, etc., your e-skills programs, etc.? How do we harness the knowledge out there? I feel we don't do it as yet. And I've already mentioned the realistic goals and then stakeholder mobilization. Honorable Kulwani has mentioned that, this consultation part, but I would like to suggest, instead of mobilizing stakeholders out there, you are almost creating further distance at this stage from what I see, from that sector. There was a phase where there was thorough stakeholder consultation and participation. But to a certain extent, you've lost the goodwill of an important sector. And without them, if you do not take the private ICT sector with you, they can deliver a lot, such as universities, I've already mentioned them, but also the knowledgeable private sector in South Africa. Harness them. That is what they have done in Brazil. And make use of them. But they will not trust you unless you clean up your own house. Get yourself ready. Become the leaders that you are. Develop the necessary focus. Reduce all the frills from the departmental program. And make sure that you really regain your position within the sector. Other than that, Chair, I know I've made a lot of comments, but, you know, we can go through. I mean, for instance, I just wanted to conclude by saying I've actually analyzed your presentation on your performance, and I've started at page 11 because that is where it starts, and it runs up to 55 pages. And on 18 of the 55 pages, it says, HR capacity constraints. HR capacity constraints. Now, that refers to, yes, vacant positions, but also the necessary skills. And that is why I have said it's a department in crisis. And let's say it is, let's admit it, and let's work to really shape this department to what to the role it should fulfill in this country. Thank you.
Sorry.
Chairperson, thank you. You know, Chairperson, I'm really considering leaving Parliament. I don't want to suffer from stroke. This is very serious. I'm aging now. I see surprises every day. Chairperson, I just want maybe to emulate the chief, the whip, my whip here. He has spoken a lot, and I think the issues that he has raised are important. I don't want to go into some of the things, but I think I'll emulate him when he speaks about participatory democracy, because last time when we spoke about the issue of the set-top boxes, we mentioned specifically that we would need need inclusion of the society, the community. Now I heard the acting DD talking about manufacturers of STDs, but no, it's just a report and he never elaborated on what is happening. Now, I just wanted to know whether they have considered the inclusion of the community in manufacturing the set-top boxes. And we were also concerned about the universal access in particular on that issue. So I wanted him to just elaborate and tell us what is happening now. Also, I think I'm a bit worried about the way the report goes on. It just states what has been done and they don't elaborate what they are doing. I wanted to know about the ECA amendment bill also, looking at the mandate of the department, that is also the department is embedded in legislation, which legislation, of course, the framework of that legislation is contained mainly on the following things, that in particular the ECA and all the other acts. But I wanted to know, what are we doing about this ECA amendment bill? Because it has been mentioned for quite some time now. And I thought the department is, are the people who are charged with the responsibility of dealing with that. We can't have things that are mentioned in many, many reports that are brought to Parliament and nothing is going on. And everything is just stagnant. It's just improper, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, I told you that I'm old. I don't want to be stimulated by what Colin has just said. I want to be cool, you see. Also, I want the acting DG to explain to me, you see, sometimes we have high expectations as this committee. I want to understand the Digital Zonga Council that has been reappointed now. What is the intention of the department, you know, in terms of the accountability to Parliament, which is this committee? Aren't we supposed to be reported at and tell us what is happening in that council? How far have they gone? Because we are concerned at this committee. We thought, you know, there are so many industries here in South Africa. They've gone a long way in terms of the standards and everything, in terms of digital migration. Now that we have that council, we want to know how far and what are they doing, what would be the future engagements on the digital migration. Thank you, Chair.
Well, Maya, Nikki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this presentation. I do have three matters that I do want to raise. In your presentation, you talk about the prepaid SIM card registration. And what is the aim for this prepaid SIM card? And why aren't they successful? And why aren't there any successes? And I need more clarity. When I read the annual report, the FET colleges in the ICT skills program, but there's no elaboration on this, on the FET colleges, and how many students enrolled in this course, how many students graduated, and what were they doing? And then are students with disabilities registered? Are they enrolled, and how many graduated? And then thirdly, very important for me, you talked about reducing the cost for communication. And I want to know, the reducing of the cost, does that include when you travel overseas and use your laptop to communicate via email? We have an NGO, and they have a bill in front of them, over 200,000 rand. That needs to be paid for using emails overseas. Only two persons went for a few days, and they're sitting with a bill of 200,000 rand. That we asked the cell phone company that to give us the details of that bill. They said we have to first pay, and then we have to wait for 30 days to get a record. To give an example, in English International Program, in your presentation, if roaming, and the aim is to reduce the network and the network cost and the pricing, we're sitting with an NGO, a small companies that have to travel overseas. They need to be in contact with the people every day by emails or by cell phone. They can't afford these enormous costs. I've been in South Korea recently, and many deaf people that I've met recently use cell phones and like a video camera. I can't dare ask for this here in South Africa. For deaf people in South Africa to have cell phones that you can communicate via sign language like a video phone. And how are you going to speed up the debate to reduce the cost for deaf people to afford it in South Africa? I know that we are 10 years behind. I thought we were ahead, but we're not. What responsibility are your department taking to speed up this whole process? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Wesser, for your presentation. Yes, a lot of interesting things have been said. I conclude with that. And I think as a committee, we've got a certain view on this whole issue. As a committee, we are sort of confronted with a lot of problems, and this committee, you know, in a couple of years' time, we don't want fingers to be pointed to us because we didn't do our oversight job properly. So, just in connection with the leadership, I've got the impression that if I ask the DOC, for instance, where are we at this hour, 25 minutes to 1 on this Wednesday, the 13th of October? Where exactly are we, for instance, with the DTT program? What has been done? What has to still be done? For instance, the outrolling of broadband. Where are we exactly now? I've got an impression that we've got all the skills in South Africa, but we need stronger leadership from the Department of Communications. You're like the director of a symphony orchestra with a baton in your hand and just ask everyone to play their part to make it a joyful occasion. If you compare this with a jigsaw puzzle, can you take us into a war room and say exactly, we are here, we need this gap to fill, then we can reach this area, for instance, in the Northern Cape. But maybe just small things. Get the expertise in South Africa. And I know the industry are willing to take part and help and to bridge this 10 to 15 year gap. But we need more leadership from the department. And I think everyone will understand this whole ICT sector better. As if you can say us exactly, where are we now? What is necessary, Chairperson, still to be done? I think it's not huge and major things to be done. Just small things. Fill in the gaps. And the expertise are in South Africa to do that. I urge you to set up a plan. So I'm honest with you. I don't know exactly where are we standing now, for instance, with the DTT. And then another thing, you said that the broadcasting standards will be announced in November. It's a month wasted. And we haven't got a lot of time, as you know, to roll out this whole DTT thing before analog has been switched off. And I've got the impression that maybe, I'm not sure, you know, you said SADC must take part in the decision and everything, but in Afrikaans we say, iemand trap water. I don't know whether it's in English, but you understand what I mean with Dr. Vesso. We are sort of walking on a treadmill on the same place or whatever. So make it snappy so that people can make decisions. Why wait? We're losing 1 month, 30 days. So, and I want to agree with what Mastori said about this digital donga. We've seen in England how important was the role of the English version of the digital donga. How did they coordinate this whole DTT process in England? And I think the digital donga must play a far bigger role to orchestrate this whole DTT project. Thank you, Chairperson.
Anybody else? Siki?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get a clarity on page 14 on ICT policy development. I think these are the deliverables from the policy branch of the department. Page 14, I think it's number 1, 2, 3, 4. They are saying on the side of on track, business on track, there is a sentence that is written, business models for users and community radio and television stations reviewed. And then in progress, 15% reduction in telecommunication costs. So my question, Chair, what does this statement mean? Can the DDG of policy in that branch elaborate more so that I can get the understanding? What does this mean, this statement? And again, Chair, I want to comment on the AG's report. If you go to page 10, the comments on the of the AG. There are three comments. The first one is the information that is being given to the AG, reported to the AG on the performance of the entities. Secondly, he's questioning the reliability of the information that has been given to the AG. How true is that information given, reliable? And that, Chair, on itself it reflects back to the department and it questions the character, the people that we have in the department, your management and leadership. Another thing, Chair, is about the compliance on the PSLA, the regulation. That is the legislation, Chair, that governs the sector, governs, and the other departments. Now, we are sitting here as this Department of Communication. Then you ask yourself, why did the department not comply on these issues? Whether it's on finance, why the department was not complying on these issues? Is it because there was a negligence from the managers itself, or it was a deliberate strategy not to deliver in that department? Because this, it talks to our democracy. This is a core check. If you don't comply on what you are requested to comply, I don't know what does it mean. Because this is not a Hollywood. And even actors, they sign contracts before they can film their, you know, they need to agree on certain things. So it's a two-way process, Chair. And again, we are going to go for local government elections, and people will be saying, this government, you promised 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and out of 6, you only implemented 1. What about? And it's us will be, you know, punished, not officials of the department. So I am saying, Chairperson, I think, yes, just to be naughty, Chair, you know, when you read these reports, I do my own personal analysis and assessment. You know, I just come to a conclusion to say maybe we need to close this department, and the President must set up a commission that will run the telecommunications sector. Yes, you have countries that they do that, because you could see. But what I'm saying, Chairperson, I think as the portfolio committee, and also coming from different political parties, the issue, we need to respect that office. The Auditor General's office, we need to respect. There are laws that govern, you know, this country. So we need to respect. So officials, they must do so. Corporate services, HR, procurement, all the departments, the branches within the department, you need to comply. And that means, Chair, this thing, it has been happening from 2005, if not 4. Immediately after the former DG, Andile Ngaba, because that department, it was running. Immediately after him, then that means those problems started to, you know, to transpire. So acting DG, the ball is in your court. We don't know when are we going to get the permanent DG, but I would request that for now, because you are acting, you have to see to it that you tighten up the screws, you set up the system, you correct the damage that has been done. We don't know how huge or how big is that damage, but we would say really, the ball is in your court to make sure that we, this department, it's a sound department, but it reflects to the leadership that you have in the department. You have DDGs, you have chief directors, you have deputy directors, you have assistant directors. I know that in that in that level, that's where things are done. And if you have, if you are a DDG, you don't have leadership skills and management skills, forget it. Because you'll find that your juniors, they are juniors, your directors and deputy directors, that they know the job. So I think what you need to be very strict. Also, I know officials, they're late coming also. I wouldn't be surprised. And Chair, lastly, can we also get, we know that there was a forensic report, investigations that were done in the department about mismanagement, irregularities. Can we also get a clarity, where are we in terms of this? Thanks, Chair.
Members, thank you very much. I've allowed, I've given quite a bit of laxity to members. It almost sounds like a budget debate. But I think it's the gravity of the situation. We are at a point, I think we're at the crossroads, and we've got to call a spade a spade. So I'm going to allow the acting DG to, and officials to respond. I know there's a lot of things have been raised. I want to also appeal to members. Mr. Kulwani has suggested that we try and meet at 2 o'clock instead of half past 2, so that we can just close this particular part, because we might not be able to do it in 10 minutes. But let me allow the acting DG and the team to respond to some of the issues that have been raised.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The ball is in my court, and I hope I'm not going to cause people to get strokes. I think it's important. I think there are a number of comments, a number of serious issues raised and questions. I think I'm in fact energized by the comments from the honorable members. I think it also gives us a sense that you know, we almost like on the same page, and it is understanding on the side of the members of what it is that we have to do, and where we need to go. I think there's agreement with many of the issues. I think we do our best with the vacancies, and I mean, there was an issue raised around whether we have the skills. You know, if I look at where we will be in 10 years' time with the ICT sector, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of access, in terms of or where we ought to be, in terms of uptake and usage, in terms of skills development, then if I look at, you know, what the environment will be then of course we don't have the skills at this point in time. I had, you know, started to discuss it with my colleagues in the department. For example, how we deliver, how we put together our adverts for the people that we have to appoint. And, you know, we will have to have 21st century adverts out so that we can get the skills that we need for our staff, for our people to be proactive in what they're doing. We are very much reactive organization. There's a problem out there in society, in the industry, and then we react. Now, that's not good business. I think where we need to go is to say, where do we want to be in 10 years' time? How do we get there? What will be the needs in the sector? And how do we deliver our policies, our strategies? How do we put together our legislation in order to deliver on what we have to deliver in the future? The DLC is about, it's not about, yes, it's about now and tomorrow, but it's about the future. But I think there's also a number of comments on leadership. We need leadership, but we need more than leadership. We need thought leadership. We don't only need leaders to manage the department. We don't only need leaders to make sure people come to work. We need thought leadership, and I think an issue was raised, how do we mobilize stakeholders? We can't mobilize stakeholders if we don't lead them. So within the ICT space in a department, we have to seriously develop thought leadership. Multi-stakeholder partnerships, that's where the world is going. No government, no industry, no academic environment, no civil society can go it alone in the way we need to develop an information society knowledge economy. So we need to collaborate. We need partnerships. And the sooner we can get our industry involved, and that is why I think a good initiative from the minister's side is the ICT Industry Forum. It is now also that we use that forum and many industry to start talking about the vision, ICT Vision 2020. Because if we don't collaborate with the industry, how are we going to get there? So what I'm saying is government and the DOC must provide leadership and not follow. And so we need to mobilize our stakeholders. And in terms of universities and skilling, the ISCUS Institute is built on a model of collaboration, utilizing existing capacity. We've signed MOUs with 5 of the big universities in South Africa, with 10 universities in Australia, with 1 in Cuba, South Korea. So we work with institutions in Europe. So we need to understand what's happening in a global environment and to customize those learnings for our own situation. So multi-stakeholder partnerships is the only way that we will develop our country in an ICT environment, and of course we need to develop thought leadership in a different areas. And we're working on that in terms of getting people on board, but I think also colleagues in the department, I think, are willing to engage with the future. And I think that's important. Unfortunately, for the past 2 years or so, there was always like a stagnation because of problems, but I think we have to deal with that. The policy development processes, green paper, white paper, and so on, whether we do go back, I don't think we need to go back. I think we need to just look at going forward. So if we do the things right, and if we consider what is being done, sometimes it seems like things are happening in an ad hoc situation. The issue is that when things are being implemented and when people think, but you know, where are things happening? I think what we need to do is to consider those, because it's a new way in policy development. It's evidence-based policy development. So what you do is you provide them for what is happening, a structure, and ensure that you bring all these things under one umbrella. The organizational review, of course, that was something that we've inherited. There was a terms of reference. The idea was at a point in time that the organization should be restructured because there's so much overlap and duplication and so on that, you know, we need to see whether certain positions are necessary or whether they should be relocated. So there was that kind of problem. Now, an institutional review properly done, you start with your mandate. And you work a process through until you then align your structure with the mandate. Now, as I've said, you know, this program is happening, but institutional review is not an event, it's a process. So going into a new strategic process, we will panel beat and accommodate the learnings that we have. Then the comment that we report on processes and not outcomes, well, we're in this business now for a few months, and there can't actually be outcomes without process. So I think we need to get our processes right. We need to get stability. We need to understand our environment, and then to see, but, you know, how do these things relate to outcomes going into the future. Our response to SOEs, I've mentioned it in a number of occasions, our oversight role, the King III report and other reports, this is not rocket science to understand these things. I think that the way we relate to our SOEs and the way we report should be redefined. I think that our reporting is too much activity-based and not outcomes-based. That is where we have a problem. So we sometimes report on activities, and it looks very good, but underneath is nothing. My colleague here will respond to the out-of-court settlement later on and the current irregularities. Deception and, in the past, I think, you can't really proceed and build a stable environment if you deceive people. I think as a collective, we need to understand the problems, and as a collective, we need to find solutions. I mean, that is very, it's management 101. There was the issue around deep crisis, and issue around focus and vision and to refocus, of course, that is important. I think we have 135 targets, 87, flagship projects, knowing that we don't have the human resources, so we need to refocus, we need to understand. But then also, to refocus in line with the medium strategic framework, refocus in line with the outcomes. We have a clear understanding of what the outcomes should be. We have a clear understanding what the goals and objectives are of government. It is clearly just to unpack those in a focused way and deliver on those things and redesign your programs and your projects. Whether we have the skills, I've alluded to that. I think we in the finance management environment, we rebuilding the internal audit function, recapacitating the risk management function in the department. We provide training and ensure that we have good processes in place. In order to really counter corruption and irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure. So those things are happening in a very systematic way. Where do we start? I think, we have to start with the filling of the post. We have to ensure that we have the skills. We have to ensure that we upgrade skills in the department, not only getting in skills from outside, but I think we have an obligation to also upgrade the skills of our own, of our staff at the moment, but also to reskill people. I think it's a lot of reskilling, right? We have to reskill in industry to get people operational within a new economy. We have to reskill and upskill people within government to get them functional, operational. Participatory democracy, that is very important. I think the way we participate in the past is no longer the way we participate in the future. I mean, we have all these modern technologies of the social media, for example, Mixit, Facebook, YouTube, all of these new technologies. I mean, unless we build the capacity and the thought leadership in the department to ensure that we build these kind of technologies into our policy strategies, the youth of tomorrow will not know what we're doing. So again, the DOC is not only about now, it's about tomorrow. And if we need to understand, we have to understand where the world is going. And we need to understand in 10 years' time, when we're confronted with a ubiquitous world, that we're ready for that, that our children are ready for that, to be working in that environment. So yes, I mean, the skills we need and so on. I will ask Norman Zulele to deal with the issues around STBs and the ECA amendment bill and also digital zone, and perhaps Rosie Sakesi to deal with the digital zonga issue.
Thanks, Dr. DG. Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. Let me start by making an input on the question of the raised by Honorable Colan around the policy environment and the policy framework. I think Dr. Vessel spoke at length in regard to that. Our understanding in the policy branch, having looked at the current scenario that we have within the four sectors meaning telecoms, broadcasting, and the e-commerce and the postal environment. What you do have there, you do have a white paper and a green paper on e-commerce. When we look at how legislation have evolved since that time, until the time when we've got the ECA, and we realized that there was a policy vacuum, in the sense that the ECA did not have a policy framework, as it were, posing challenges with regard to the implementation of that law. The postal sector globally is being integrated into the broader ICT sector. And within the IOTU, they are speaking about the three dimensions of that sector. The financial dimension that we have dealt with, today we have got the post bank bill. The E dimension, which looks at the modernizing how postal services are provided by postal administrations. And lastly, the fiscal dimension, which is addressed by our concept of post offices. When we have that sector moving towards being fully integrated into the ICT sector, it requires that you think differently. You have got a new vision on how that sector is going to support the development of the country in general, as it were, and form part of the mainstream of the sector. In that regard, we have the view that we need to review the policy environment, even if it means that we need to go back and look at all the white papers, we must be reviewed, all of them, with a view to create a new vision going forward. I think I just want to assure honorable members that there is a process that we're undertaking in the department, which we have started about 2 years ago. That process will ensure that there is a representation of stakeholders in developing of that vision that we've got, that we need to develop going forward. Our view is that we will need to establish a national steering committee, government, industry, civil society, and everyone to develop that vision. And we are hoping that before the end of this year, we'll have a national colloquium to thresh out the things that need to be done going forward. Out of that colloquium, we'll have an action plan, which clearly articulate in terms of how that vision is going to be developed, how that national steering committee is going to be supported, and so on. And we are hoping that because it's quite a very involved process, it may take time. We are looking at having this policy framework passed around 2012. And develop a national ICT law for the country governing sector by by 2030, if it's possible. That's where we are going. It is for this reason that we had to look at how do we strengthen the capacity of our SOEs to be able to say, when we go to that environment, how will they respond to that? By separating policy making issues and policy implementation and strengthening corporate governance issues. That's why today in this committee we are deliberating on the SAPO bill to look at those issues and also to refocus the mandate of the post office going forward. Same thing that we are doing in the broadcasting space with regard to the broadcasting service bill, looking at corporate governance issues in the SABC and in general. So I just want to assure honorable members that there is a plan that we have put in place to be able to create that vision going forward as a country. I will respond to the question around digital Dzonga. What will be the role of Parliament or in regard to the work of digital Dzonga? So of course, Dzonga, we have modeled it around the UK model, but we have tweaked it to ensure that we have got a one-stop shop, unlike what they have in the UK, for example. That structure is a very critical structure towards the success of the entire project, because it brings everybody in the value chain to ensure that we have got a smooth transition, as it were. We are in a process now, once the minister has appointed new council members in the Dzonga, in engaging with the DPSA to establish Digital Dzonga as a government component, as required by the Public Service Act, Section 7 of that Act. Once we have agreed on that model, the model will clearly articulate the roles and responsibilities of various stakeholders. The role of the minister, role of the council, and the role of the National Assembly. If it's a government component, obviously, of course, it gets budget through our vote or communications. Hence, there must be a mechanism within which the council, the Digital Dzonga, reports to Parliament, as required by the Public Service Act. So all those things will be articulated when we finalize that with the DPSA. And I must say that National Treasury is on board to look at funding issues of that secretariat or Digital Dzonga. On the question of the ECA amendment, honorable members will recall that the issue of ECA amendment was not necessarily in the program of the department in terms of legislation. Something that came as there were discussions around cost to communicate and so on. But what we're looking at in there is not to do an overall amendment of the law, but to look at the things that needs to be done now given our experience and lessons that we have learned since 2006, that needs to be rectified to give the regulator the chance to be able to do its work. That's what this amendment is about. It's not about the entire overall of the ECA. Just look at those things that we need to do to capacitate the regulator and giving it the necessary regular instruments to do its work, particularly around areas around turnaround times. If you look at across the world, regulators, how they are measured, one of the critical indicator there is about timelines. The speed with which it does its work in terms of developing regulations, making decisions, and so on. So we are looking at that area in terms of the ECA. And I hope you will see those things as we table this amendment in Parliament. I think there was also a question around the issue in page 14. I think there's a digital business model for users and community radios. I think it's an oversight. What should have been reported there, and I just want to apologize for that, we were trying to look at in relation to the issue around community TV. If you look at the broadcasting space, community radio stations are provided for in the white paper and in the law. There are no provisions around community TV. There's a policy vacuum. So we're looking at developing a model which will assist the regulator to say, when you license community TVs, what do you need to look at so that they are sustainable going forward? Currently, as it is now, they are licensed. They've got licenses. They don't have the money. They come to government. And in terms of our funds, there's no appropriation to fund community TV. It's only about community radio stations. So I think we'll rectify that that issue, as it were. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Norman. Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. On the issue of the digital song, as Norman has reported, that the minister has established a council. But what is also more important is that we need to establish the digital summer office. And with regard to that, as a department, we have actually finalized the advert, and they were advertised last Sunday. That is the executive director and the senior managers. The reason why we are proceeding, even though we still have to finalize the legal entity, is because we take note of the agency of moving forward with regard to the implementation of the design migration. And what now the council is really busy with is to ensure that they proceed with the work in terms of advising the minister on the implementation of the design migration program. Now, if you recall, members, is that minister led a presentation on DTT, I think it was on the 2nd of June, where he also reported that SADC will lead the discussion in terms of the standard that will be adopted. The reason why SADC is because as a country, we cannot just on our own adopt a different standard that is different from other SADC countries, because it's got implication with regard to how you manage the coordination in terms of interferences and all that. That's why it's important that as SADC, we unanimously adopt a standard that we would proceed forward. Since the 2nd of June 2010, SADC members are nominated members that went to France and UK and Brazil. And this ad hoc committee then conducted the investigation. The initial plan was that the meeting of the ministers, which the acting DG was referring to in November, initially it was planned to be in September, but unfortunately there were a number of delays within SADC. And I know for the fact that the minister wrote to SADC complaining about the fact that the delay in SADC meeting of the ministers is actually delaying us as a country moving forward. So the complaint about, you know, us losing a month, we're losing out on a lot, is those are the sentiments that are also shared by the minister, and he has also communicated that to SADC. So unfortunately, we are bound by how SADC manages their meetings. We can complain, but we can't schedule a SADC ministerial meeting as South Africa. And I think that that really covers that on the issue of the Tonga.
Thank you, Ms. Kese. I think the issues around the prepaid SIM card, success or not, and the cost to communicate, I will throw those issues to Norman and Rosie, but whilst you're thinking, I will ask Sam to deal with the finance-related matters, for example, the out-of-content, out-of-court settlement, current irregularities, and what we're doing about it.
Thank you, Attendee. The issue around irregular expenditure, or maybe let me start with the out-of-court settlement. Yes, indeed, there was an out-of-court settlement reached, but it was mainly involving one case. Well, the reason at that time was that the legal costs to be incurred are likely to be far more, and therefore it made sense at that time that instead of proceeding with the matters, it be settled. But that does not take away the wrongdoing. And that's why, as a department, there has been a process where we solicit legal advice to say, once a person has left and there's wrongdoing, does that mean that it's all lost? And we are of the view that that should not be the route to travel. As long as the person is still around, living in South Africa and breathing, even if they have crossed the borders, there are ways and means of making sure that any wrongdoing is dealt with. So there is a process of trying to deal with some of those issues. On the irregular expenditure, I must indicate that indeed the department has suffered an adverse audit opinion as a result of the irregular expenditure emanating from the previous years. I must say that I did mention earlier on that about 82% of this irregular expenditure dates back to 2006, where literally processes were flouted. Unfortunately, this current administration has to suffer as a result of that. We are not saying as a department that we are running away from the responsibility, because at this point in time we have to account because we are here. But the reality is that somebody made a decision at that time, and all these years this department has been audited, nothing was picked up, all was in order until such time that during the 9-10 audit, all of a sudden these issues came up. But the measures that we have taken as a department, or we've taken a view that we will look into each and every case. In fact, that process has started. I must mention that the irregular expenditure of 20.2 million, there are cases that are involving people who are instrumental in those transactions. And this is a matter that is currently before the courts. It hasn't been finalized. The other matters, they also involve people who have left the department, and there is a view to seek legal advice to say what can be done in as far as addressing these issues. The small amounts really that relate to people who are internally, I think out of the 24 million, we're talking about 920,000. That genuinely talks to the financial year 9-10. Various measures are still to be implemented, because this irregular expenditures, they'll have to be presented to the Departmental Adjudication Committee with reasons why they were incurred. And once they've been reviewed by the committee, the corrective measures will then be recommended to say what sort of punishment should be put forward, or what sort of corrective measures must be put forward. But I must indicate that the department is taking this matter very serious, because it's just unfair that in the financial year 2008-09, you are experiencing irregular expenditure of 4.9 million or 4.1 million, sorry. And all of a sudden in 9-10, there's an irregular expenditure of 24 million, which talks to 2006. Meanwhile, the department has always been audited, and therefore you start asking yourself to say what sort of audit has been conducted on the department. So, in a nutshell, those are the measures that have been taken. I think I've combined the irregular expenditure, the out-of-court settlement, there is an issue perhaps that I must also talk to, the issue of the set-top boxes. There was a question raised by the Honourable Member around what's currently happening. I think the acting DG as well as the DDG infrastructure, they've touched a little bit on that issue to say when the issue of the standards came up, quite a substantial amount of work had gone into making, putting preparations in place, including drafting of the request for proposals that was going to be ultimately used to invite the manufacturers to come on board. So this process is basically dependent on the standards being finalized, and once they are finalized, it should be back on track.
Norman or Rosie, the other two matters.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll be dealing with the question around the cost to communicate issue. There was a question around issues around international roaming.
Sorry, just give me a second. Emma, I'm looking at the time, and I know that people would want to break for lunch. And so shall we adjourn at 1:30? And then if we will come back, then at about 2:15, if necessary, right?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. When we were conceptualizing the issue of the cost to communicate sometime in 2007, we looked at the fact that cost is a function of other variables, quality, access to infrastructure, and other things. We then developed a 3-year program of action. That program of action looked at cost as a function of those other variables. And it proposes a number of measures that need to be put in place in the areas where regulations need to be developed and fast-tracked. That program talks about that. In the areas where we need to amend legislation, it talks about that. In the areas where we need to develop new policies, it talks about that. About the broadband policy. It is a result of that program of action. In the areas where we need to issue policy directions to ICASA, it indicates that. And fast-tracking those, like, for example, the local urban bundling, fast-tracking and so on. So we've looked at the comprehensive activity that needs to be done to address the issue of the cost to communicate. Because we believe that not one instrument will deal with the issue of cost to communicate. And one of the things which is there is around investment in ICT infrastructure. In particular, investment in submarine infrastructure. To deal with the cost, the international roaming cost. When we did our analysis across the world, we found that if you look at, for example, the link between Europe and America, there are thousands of cables that link those, and the costs are cheaper. The program to deal with issues around the investment in the fiber optic was precisely to deal with the issues around having submarine cables that links this continent and the rest of the world. Therefore, you don't have to make a call. It must first go to Europe and then come to Africa. Now, the issues around international roaming are a subject of international agreement. I think the colleagues who are at the ITU at the moment are looking at this issue in the sense that there is an area that they're looking at around international telecommunications regulation, which deals with how countries, how operators charge each other for calls which are being originated in a particular country and terminated on another country. That's one area that they're looking at the moment. And I must say it's not an easy, it's a complex area of work because you need to balance you know, the interest of the developed and the developing country. Precisely why when we look at how we invest in submarine cables, either we go to Brazil and the nearest Portugal and so on. So unless we really accelerate investment in the fiber in submarine cables, we will not be able to deal with the issue of international roaming and pricing of international telephony. So, what I'm saying is that the issue of international roaming is an issue of international treaty that we also want us as a country to put efforts in investing in submarine cables if we are to deal with the issues, to bring competition in that space. Not only you've got Telkom there, I think today you've got Seacom operating, and so on. We still need more cables to deal with the issue of the international roaming. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, can I suggest that we turn at this stage and we reconvene at 2:15? But I'm going to ask the members just to give me 5 minutes, a few minutes before you leave, so that when we come back, we are clear what's going to do as a committee. Thank you very much. We'll come back at 2:15.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Dr. Viswa, are there any other responses to the questions and comments made?
Honourable Chairperson, only perhaps on one issue, and that is the issue raised around the unreliability of information, page 10 of the AG's report. I will just ask Mr. Waikazi to respond to that. That's the only outstanding one.
Thanks, Acting DG. I think on the two issues raised on the AG's report or the findings of the AG's report, we did indicate earlier on that we do take the findings of the AG quite serious. That's why, as a department, there are measures that have been taken to make sure that instances of non-compliance are actually rectified. I did speak earlier on about the review of policies that has just happened. I spoke about the strengthening of internal audit and risk management units. I also did indicate that it's going to be a practice going forward that all managers, responsibility managers, particularly those who are instrumental in initiating procurement transactions, they go through a course on supply chain management, PFMA, as well as budget processes, to make sure that there is a common understanding in the organization in as far as compliance issues are concerned. So we have taken note of the issues raised by the AG, and those recommendations are already, or the corrective measures are being implemented. With regard to the reliability of information at the level of SOEs, we do receive reports from SOEs on a quarterly basis. They are being analyzed. They deal with two aspects, non-financial performance as well as financial performance. As a department at the present moment, also given the capacity that we have, we unfortunately have to rely on that information as well. Despite the measures that we've put in place to try and make sure that we independently verify the information, but if the entities decide to give information that is perhaps or that cannot be relied on to the AG, it poses a bit of a challenge, because the kind of oversight role that we play as a department, we cannot really micromanage the entities. We can only operate at a certain level, and some of the things obviously will fall through the cracks. But the acting DG did indicate earlier on that there are measures that are being implemented on a continuous basis, and this will also include having to strengthen the internal capacity to make sure that we've got enough people in the shareholder unit to try and deal with some of these issues. Perhaps just one other point that I must also mention, which is not really related to this to the issue of information. It does relate to the strengthening of internal processes. Once again, there's just one issue that I omitted to indicate that the the systems and processes and procedures in the department are quite functioning. I think the acting DG spoke about the fact that a lot of things had to be re-looked into, including having to reconstitute the departmental bid adjudication committee, having to put structures in place. I must say or report to this committee that there is order, things are moving the way they should be. This is basically linked to the findings of the AG. So there is definitely a sense of comfort that compliance in the department is actually taken serious. And
Honourable Chairperson, this I think from our side three responses. I don't know if we've missed something, but that is where we're at.
FEG colleges.
Oh yes. Yeah, the model that we've developed for East Coast Institute is about is based on collaboration and the utilization of existing capacity and resources. So we're working closely with universities, and we've signed, as I said, you know, 5 or 6 MOUs with universities to work collaboratively. Because we're talking about e-skills, and that is a new concept in South Africa. So we need to provide leadership there in the country. We also signed now MOUs with 22 FET colleges, and we support those colleges in collaboration with the Department of Higher Education and Training. With many things, for example, through our own programs, but also through USASA and other private sector partners, we're connecting those FET colleges. We support programs in training in collaboration with, at this point in time, Cisco, Microsoft, and also we're starting developing programs with ICDL. Then we also developed for the first time a multimedia qualification for FET colleges. At the moment, multimedia is only offered at the first year level at universities, and our students are just not ready for those courses. So we now developed a multimedia qualification for NQF level 2, 3, and 4, and level 2 will start offering with colleges and NAMESA involvement as well, beginning of the next academic year, next year, level 2. And I think that will provide a good basis for students to go forward into university, and doing multimedia is the future. That's where things are going, and we need to start educating people there. In collaboration with our industry partners, we have last year, the previous financial year, I think, trained about 2,000 students at FET colleges. The detail we can provide if it's necessary. This year and going forward, we will even be able to train more people. What we're also doing at the moment is to
Chairperson, that man on top there is participating unfairly.
Yes, Chairperson. So those are the other things we're working with FET colleges. Of course, we also make sure that we include a wide range of students, disabled and so on. And we also, for a second year now, we have an ICT career summit. We had a career summit 2 weeks ago where we invite some of the best FET college students and expose them to the industry and expose them to
to job opportunities in the industry, also exposing them to new technologies and also to make ICT fun. So it's also a fun expo. And then of course we also apart from promoting ICTs and ICTs education, skills development, IT colleges, we also collaborating with the Department of Basic Education in terms of E-rate intervention to make it affordable for schools and even IT colleges to access internet at a lower rate. So there are many things happening with IT colleges. And we do all of this, of course, in collaboration with the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Dr. Visser, thank you very much. We've had a very long session this morning. I want to put a proposal to the committee. I have conferred with all the parties, and there's full and unanimous support for the resolution that I want to read out to the House. The resolution or the statement by the committee with regard to the briefing of the department is as follows. The Portfolio Committee on Communications is gravely concerned that for the better part of the current financial year, the Department of Communications was in a state of virtual disarray, if not wholly dysfunctional. This, in part, is characterized by the large number of vacancies, particularly at senior management level, the current low level of spending on operational programs, the poor staff morale, the financial and corporate governance challenges confronting public entities such as the SABC and Centec, and the absence of effective leadership at managerial level. However, the committee has noted with some satisfaction the efforts made more recently to stabilize the operations of the DOC and to fast-track specific policy development initiatives and operational programs identified in the strategic plan of the DOC. The committee therefore resolves that the DOC, 1, should initiate a process of redefining its strategic priorities so that it is consistent with the minister's performance and service delivery contract signed with the presidency. 2, urgently fill vacant posts with suitably qualified and competent personnel, particularly at senior management level. 3, review the contract with the consultancy that was appointed to undertake an institutional review of the Department of Communications. 4, prudently increase the level of spending on core operational programs. 5, consider the creation of a specialized division, adequately staffed with personnel with requisite skills, to manage its relationships with public entities. 6, take urgent steps to institute proper financial controls over departmental expenditure and to minimize the risks relating to irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. 7, undertake a comprehensive skills audit. 8, report on how it proposes to resolve the issue of irregular staff appointments. 9, report on measures instituted by it in respect of public entities that have flouted good corporate governance rules. And number 10, that the department reports to the committee on progress made in respect of the above matters before the end of the parliamentary session this year. So towards the end of November, we would want a report on all of these matters, steps that have been taken by the administration on the matters that have been raised. And there's the draft resolution on behalf of the committee. Can I have any comments, or if there are no comments, then someone to second the motion. Can I just give Advocate De Lange a chance?
I raise with you, Chair, that maybe we should in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, line 7, We say the financial and corporate governance challenges confronting public entities. Maybe we should just add confronting the department and public entities. Because later on, under the recommendations, we say urgent steps must be taken to deal with those challenges.
Slight amendment that is being proposed to the resolution in the statement. Mr. Kulwani?
I'll support the resolution, but with one understanding, Chair, only your concluding remarks, which is not in the statement. You see, in your statement, they are saying that it reports to the committee on progress made in respect of the above matters before end of the parliamentary session. Now, on your remarks, you are saying towards end of November. I think that will be problematic. We just leave it as is, not towards end of November, because actually they should be coming tomorrow. Because you see, this thing is falling apart. I don't think that you can wait towards the end of November, but then work out the possible dates and so on so that you communicate with them to come back. Because we want action immediately. We don't have time to wait for other months and or weeks and so on. So I think if you leave it as is on your statement without pronouncing November, it will be fine.
Thank you. Michael? Thank you very much. There's a proposer and a seconder to the resolution. Are we agreed? Thank you very much. It's unanimously agreed. Dr. Visso and the team, I think you've got a clear idea of what the committee expects. As a matter of urgency, as of yesterday, according to Mr. Kulwani. Thanks very much then to the team for the session. And we now invite Centec, the board of Centec and the acting CEO to come forward, please.
Are you okay with us?